Who's afraid of summer?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
No place to go, darling.
Well, it's cold, but be happy you're here and not there. Snowing like crazy in the northeast, Boston getting pounded, but the bigger story, which you just heard being discussed, is this terrible stretch of tornadoes in the deep south. And expect the total number of dead to go up. Lee County in Alabama, eastern Alabama, I don't know, maybe an hour from Montgomery. Half-mile-wide tornado went for about 20 miles. And there's just no way to get out of the way. So just completely tore it up. They're just getting first daylight pictures there now. Get an assessment of the damage, and they hope to obviously still find some survivors. But very bad story overnight. And it's weird. Early March is a really dangerous time in the South for tornadoes. You get the cold air and the warm air banging together, and you get that. So, meanwhile, here in Chicago, yeah, it's just cold. Really cold. But this is it. I believe we'll be done with the cold by the end of the week. Saturday, Sunday, 70 and sunny.
Is this a prediction, or do you know this?
It's a feeling.
A feeling.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Just a feeling.
A feeling like you knew stuff about elections that you haven't been right on.
And knew stuff about the Hawks.
Yeah.
Did you say 70s by the weekend?
70. Yeah, 70 and sunny. Yeah, 70 and sunny.
It's going to be 34 on Friday.
What?
And raining. Like, yeah. Rain
snow
week.
In the morning.
Well, my point is, eventually it's going to be 70
yeah,
and sunny.
What are you talking about?
I don't trust the meteorologist. I trust Steve Cochran.
Steve Cochran, yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan Noble's going to be in studio with us this morning. He's in town chasing around an old Jewish guy from Vermont.
It looked like a party at Navy Pier last night.
I'm going to ask Ryan Noble this. I think it's cool. I'm Bernie Sanders' politics and mine are a little far apart, but the fact that a little old Jewish, well, he's not little, but an old Jewish guy from Vermont can appeal to urban African Americans. I mean, you chart that, nobody's going to believe you.
You know, it's interesting. I watched that movie, the Gary Hart movie, about his scandal. But the one takeaway of that movie was that he ran for president in 1984. And then he came back in 88 and he was the front runner. But the reason that he was able to do that is they kept the mechanism or the organization together. And I think Bernie Sanders kept the organization together, because be able to say I'm running for president and have... 12,000 people show up at Navy Pier on a flip of the...
But you said 84?
No, and this was Gary Hart, the story about Gary Hart.
Oh, well, Gary Hart.
Last night was 12,000. Yeah.
But 12,000 people to show up, that's a testament to keeping the organization together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he ran a great campaign in 2016, and just 3 years later, he's able to get 12,000 people out to Navy Pier.
A couple of the mistakes he made, he's addressing right away. They said he didn't talk enough about himself, and he didn't talk enough to black folks, and he hit both.
I didn't realize he was 6 feet tall. You just taught me something, Stephen. The guy could, like, legit be a starting point guard in the league.
Yeah, he's got moves. Yeah, there's no question he has moves.
6 feet.
So, all right, well, let's do this. How about the top six at six?
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, entire nation on the edge of their seats because Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, has joined the Democratic presidential race. He is currently standing at 1% in Iowa, 0% in New Hampshire.
Hickenlooper?
The Hickenlooper train.
H-dub?
It'd be HL, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's right. My bad.
Yeah. Hickenlooper. I like him. Nobody's heard of him. And that makes... What's the total now? Do we have a running count? Do we have a ticker? Like the ticker in Times Square in New York?
How many there'll be when it's all over if they go excess of 20, is my guess.
It's crazy. Next. Temperatures will sit at around 0 degrees for a good portion of the morning. It'll eventually warm up to 10, 11.
Wind chill is 15 to 20 below, worse than that in some areas.
I saw in Woodstock, Illinois, overnight, it was negative 10, and they got the right now they're sitting at negative 6.
The fun thing is when you get in your car, if you're parked in a garage, like when I left my garage this morning, it was 24. By the time I got to my stop sign, which is 500 yards away, it was 1.
I like watching it go down.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm a part of a race.
Do you have the thing in there like a slide whistle like I have where you pull out and it goes...
Yeah.
This has been such
as fun as that.
A terrible winter that we're sitting in March, at the beginning of March, with possibly, you know, negative 10 degrees, negative 6 in Woodstock. And we're all like, that's winter. Because we had such polar vortex temperatures. If there hadn't been any negative temperatures up to this point, we'd be doing the whole, are you ready? Did you duct tape your window? Get Lou on the phone. We got to talk about how to prepare your weatherize, your world. Today we're like, it's almost spring.
Well, you measure it against the polar vortex and you go, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then if you consider what it's really supposed to be like this time of year, what the average temperatures are.
What is it, 40 or something?
40 is the high, the average high. The average low is 25, so wow, we're way below that.
But it's only a few more days, Steve. 70 and sunny on Saturday.
I'm writing that down.
Next, Senator Rand Paul said he's going to block the president's national emergency declaration. He joins 3, maybe 4 Republicans. It could be as many as 10, maybe 12. The Democrats need 13, maybe 14, to override a potential veto if the Senate, in fact, shoots down the president's national emergency declaration. You remember the one that he announced after talking about himself for 20 minutes, and then he remembered it was an emergency. You remember all that. Next. HBO premiered part one of Leaving Neverland, the documentary focusing on the potential alleged Michael Jackson abuse of young boys. The Jackson estate had threatened to sue. Last night they released on YouTube archived live at Wembley performances to counter the program, the documentary itself. Anybody watch it?
I watched the whole thing. It is. It's hard to watch. Yeah, it's hard to watch. I couldn't sleep.
They do, probably for the first time ever, they spend a very explicit amount of time with explicit language and very descriptive about the alleged abuse, and it's very hard to stomach.
And it's so consistent between victims that it seems that this really is true.
Well, it's hard to imagine that there wasn't something awful that went on.
It's amazing though what parents will when star, you know, they were like, we thought he was going to be our friend. What big star wants to be a friend of a 7-year-old boy? You know, like, I know it is easy to say after the fact, but they got sucked right in.
Yeah, they did.
Did you see that the BBC Radio has pulled all of the Michael Jackson catalog?
Yeah, BBC Two.
In a startling turnaround, and I don't know if this was on purpose or what, but I got in the car this morning, 5:15, 5 o'clock, and scanned quickly, or whatever radio station was on. I think it was the new rap one, 104.3 was on. They're playing "Don't Stop Till You Get Enough," and that's not in the format. Right, they are playing 90s hip hop. So the idea they went back to an early 80s Michael Jackson song seems to be in defiance.
What station was this?
This is 104.3.
What is that, Kiss?
This is the new one that everyone went hot for. That
play the oldies,
DJ.
Yeah.
They play
jams.
The new oldies, the new oldies.
The new oldies. But yeah, I thought it to be startling to see a radio station go in complete defiance of saying, I'm not going to take his music off. I'm going to go out of format to play it.
You know what it could be? Guy's not paying attention.
Maybe.
Could be guys on a Friday just going, we should probably pull the Michael Jackson from Monday morning.
They're playing Ja Rule, and they're playing Jay-Z, and they're playing Kanye West. To go to Michael Jackson, that's out of format.
It's very odd. Very odd.
Well, they don't have HBO, so they couldn't watch it.
Yeah, maybe. I think the hardest part for me watching the documentary was it's not foreign footage. When you see the footage of him on concert tour, the bad tour, and they show that, and he's hand in hand with a little 7-year-old boy. In this case, the first the guy, now a guy who, you know,
Wade,
not with the other one. But regardless, he's telling his story as an adult. You see that footage, and you're like, I know that footage. I've seen that footage before. I was somebody just like everybody in this room who watched, going, well, that's weird. and didn't do anything about it. And to know that that was happening, it's kind of on us.
See, I thought the most bizarre quotes were from his family along that line, like, you know this guy. And they were like, ah, nothing, we didn't think anything was going on. You're having a kid sleep in his bed, you don't think anything's going on?
My mom slept in the room next door. She's like,
there was a period of time, though, and I'm not defending it, obviously, but there was a period of time where Michael Jackson was protected from his own family. There was enough of a Michael Jackson circle around him that even his family, I'm not talking about Joe, but even the family members who might have tried to intervene, I'm not saying they did, but he had people around him to such a degree that they couldn't get in. And there's a portion, I think they talked about it last night, where one of the kids was subjected to a marriage ceremony.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where there was a ring exchange.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's
that's a big part of it, too, is just the apparatus around Michael Jackson. And I think one of the moms is talking about as the tour went on and they got more comfortable spending time together, that you saw the parents' hotel room get further and further and further from Michael Jackson's suite. And they would complain about it. And they go, there's just no more rooms. You're just going to have to stay on this wing. And they, on purpose, there seemed to be a separation between the parents and the kid.
And you couldn't go down the hall and knock on the door and check on your kid because there were two or three concentric circles you'd have to get through to get there.
Yeah. So even when you were at Neverland, she said they would take off and you can't find them because it was 28. A million acres of, you know, like, it was impossible.
Yeah, it's worth seeing. It's but you got to have a tough stomach, I'll tell you that.
Next. Tough health news from Michael J. Fox. Apparently his Parkinson's has gotten worse. He said he's been subjected to falling down a lot in the last few months, and he's concerned, obviously. Meanwhile, Dwayne The Rock Johnson has decided to do the same for dad that he did for mom. He bought his mom a house last fall. He just bought his dad a house this weekend. Anybody here buy their parents a house this weekend?
No.
Nope.
No? Okay. Next. Bulls won a quadruple overtime game on Friday night. Ridiculous. 168-161. It was the most points scored in franchise history. Had a rematch against the Hawks this weekend, and didn't go so well. They lost. The refs ejected the Hawks rookie Trey Young for taunting. Apparently, he stared too long at Chris Dunn.
Yeah.
Trading a pull-up three-pointer. Didn't he stare at his back?
Karm was... I don't know what happened there.
Because the report I saw was he stared at his back. That's bouncing material?
The whole thing was preposterous. First, he got a technical in the first half because Chris Dunn hit him in the head, and then they just teed them both up, so that was ridiculous. And then he hit a three and stared at him as Dunn didn't see it. He's just walking to the bench. There was a timeout call. They kicked him out. And I'm sitting there like, did I come over to the United Center today to cover this game for the Steve Cochran Show to watch you guys ref or to watch Trey Young play basketball, damn it?
It's hard to believe. Hard to believe the modern athlete is considered softer than they used to be if you're getting bounced for staring at another guy.
Reggie Miller tweeted out that he's like, what has happened to my beloved
right? NBA?
He said he'd be broke and penniless if he got fined every time he taunted somebody.
Mom, he's looking at me.
After the game, the Hawks are coming into the locker room, walking off the court. Young is in the hallway, wearing flip-flops, giving everyone a high five, just laughing about it. And coaches are saying to him, you were having an efficient game, then you go and get yourself kicked out. He's hugging Vince Carter. Atlanta was very happy to win that game for two teams that are going absolutely nowhere.
Bizarre. One more. The Blackhawks late game in San Jose did not go well. 5-2, the loss. Or how many points down now?
Eight.
8 points out of a playoff spot with 16 to go.
Yes.
Each game is 2 points. That's four games out. Think of it in baseball terms. They're four games out with 16 to play. They would need a complete collapse by the majority of the Western Conference at this point, along with a run of about 13 of 16 to get this done. It doesn't look good, kids. And,
Dylan Strome says they can win seven in a row. Just roll them off. Why not? Never say die.
They can win 14. They can win 16.
Yeah.
They could also win four. So it's just disappointing, really disappointing weekend. As they got in it, they're back out of it.
The game on Saturday, the disappointing game against the LA Kings, letting them win their first game in a month and in dominant fashion, that's the one where you're like, I wish you could have that back. Yeah.
That's your top 6 at 6.
That's it.
That's all today for the top 6 at 6.
No more.
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
/6:28, so I get a text from last night. I guess it was a group text, right?
It was a group text.
Sandberg wanted everyone to know she was going to be able to watch Very Cavallari, the season premiere. And, whoo, what a relief for the rest of us. Very Cavallari is what?
It is the Kristen Cavallari Jay Cutler show on E. And usually I watch it with my husband, but he had a Hawks game last night, so ordinarily we would table it and watch it together tonight. But for the sake of our show,
you had to watch it. Right?
We agreed to watch it separately, and he watched it when he got home.
How often does that agreement come down? Because is there a standard rule for we watch this together, we don't watch it separately?
We have one. There's only a few shows it applies to: Top Chef, Modern Family, Very Cavallari.
Well, like Maureen and I are catching up on The Americans. We're on season 5 now out of 6. I'm sure that ended last spring, by the way. And we don't watch it separately.
Yeah, that's we have a good... And, you know, Pat works nights, so it comes up probably more often for us than...
Carmen, do you have a rule on this with your fiancé?
I've seen it once, Steve. I missed last night. I love Jay.
No, not Very Cavallari.
You I'm and sorry. Chelsea watch stuff together.
You're getting the show on your headphones, right?
Yes, yes, I'm right okay. here. I'm sorry. I was trying to get caught up on Very Cavallari.
I see. So do you have a rule where if you and Chelsea are watching a show together, like a series, that you don't watch it separately?
We do, but we're not very good at it. Last night we were watching Sinner, and she was ahead of where I was at, and that show is haunting.
So she breaks it more than you do?
Yes, it's her fault, Steve.
Well, because you work at nights and weekends. Yeah. I mean, you're the one with the tough, you know, schedule.
Well, then they don't watch it together.
Anyway, Very Cavallari did not disappoint.
Nice.
There was a llama involved. They borrowed a llama from Luke Bryan and his wife to see if they want to get a llama.
Why does Luke Bryan have a llama?
They rescue animals.
The hot animal of choice.
Yeah, they both have
stars.
Farms. Yeah, so yeah. He rescues animals.
Is the llama indigenous to Tennessee? Was I not aware of that?
I don't know about that. She had kangaroos. Luke Bryan, they have a ton of different animals that have been left for dead.
I believe you just said the sentence. She had kangaroos. Who had kangaroos?
Caroline. His wife, Caroline, was on the show. So they
does
rescued.
Does she have a zoo?
A whole farm of animals like that. Kangaroos, I forget what
that's
else.
The problem when you make too much money. When you make too much money, you have to spend it somewhere. So she started an animal sanctuary.
Yes. Yep. And they named it after their niece that passed away. But
well, that's nice. But does a kangaroo want to be in Tennessee?
Yeah, they looked happy. But Jay Cutler was hilarious. Kristen was a little bit over spray tanned in some of the scenes, but it was a great show overall.
Mm-hmm.
The kangaroo looked happy?
Mm-hmm. The kangaroo did. It sidled up to one of them.
You forget because the Bears are good and Jay Cutler's gone and good riddance, but when Jay Cutler comes on the screen, there is a little bit of like, hey!
He's hilarious.
I don't know.
He dishes
he's
out
funny.
The dating advice. Yeah.
I think he's hilarious. One of the best. Steve, one of the best characters.
He had a fly swatter last night that he was...
They play like boom, boom, boom when he walks in. They play a music that is befitting to Jay Cutler.
Like,
it's not like a rap song. It's
like
boom, boom,
slow
boom,
loping
boom, boom,
sloth
boom.
Music.
Here comes the doofus. And is this the most energy he has, or is he going to turn this into something else?
No, this is he's great. Next episode, I think he's going to show up at Uncommon James, and he's going to lay down some law with the employees.
Uncommon James is their company.
Yeah. Yep.
And his point of the day when he's not doing this is what? Fishing, hunting, boating?
He's hunting. He was hunting flies, though, this episode. And he took the boys to a play date.
Wow. Hard to believe we had an energy issue with Jay. I know when we did that deal with Jay Cutler years and years ago when he came from Denver, the one thought I had at that time was someday you'll be able to watch Jay on TV getting a loaned llama and discussing whether or not it was a good idea.
Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call Dr. Morse right now.
Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. And, Doc, how are you today?
Doing great for a little chilly Monday morning.
Thanks for having us over on, what was it, Friday? Thursday? Wednesday? When did I see you?
Thursday.
Thursday. Dr. Most and had lunch with Mickey and Maureen and me at the hospital there. What do you call that hospital now?
Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital.
Man, is that a beautiful building.
Not only did they have lunch, Mickey said he left with swag.
He did. He left with swag and a check.
Oh, yeah, and a check for $101.
Yeah, a donation from Dr. Most for the place that Mickey works. So,
why'd we go with $101?
See, Mary, you always have to be one better than Steve.
Oh, okay.
So when Steve writes a check for 100, I write for 101, and then Mick knows that I gave more than his brother.
Right.
Very smart.
Right. Yeah, because he'd like to be a most brother. Frankly, wouldn't we all? At 641, any health news we need to jump in about before we hit the topic?
No, worried about frostbite at this time of the year is kind of unusual, but that's about it, to be honest with you. Nothing really breaking here.
What about everybody breaking everything?
Slipping and falling. We were talking about slipping and falling on Friday.
Man, you must have records in the emergency room.
Yeah, the orthopedists are just loving this kind of weather because, you know, all these slips and falls with all these breaks. And, you know, influenza season, when it stays this cold, influenza will stick around a little bit longer as well. So between those two, you know, you guys are keeping us busy.
Colon Cancer Awareness Month is March. Men and women, what's the incidence here for each?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. This is one cancer that really doesn't pick on one sex more than the other. So the incidence is about equal for both men and women. The sad thing is that it's still as prevalent as it is, although we've really have seen a gradual decline since the 1980s, when we really started to be people aware of this and made screening more popular.
And this is survivable. Obviously, like all cancers, the earlier you get it, the better, but much more survivable than it was when it killed my father back in the early 90s.
Absolutely. And this is one of those, the earlier you find it, the much higher chance you have of survivability. And although the survival rate for advanced cancer is, you know, in the 5-year range, 50-60%, but those that we find early, it's essentially a cure if you find it at the earliest stage.
150,000 new cases of colon cancer every year. Is the colonoscopy at a certain age the best screening still?
Absolutely. You know, and we used to use the 50 years would be the screening time. Now we've unfortunately have seen an increase in those under the age of 50. And the bad thing about those that we found under the age of 50 is they often have advanced disease. Eddie Olchek, you know, your good friend, is a perfect example of that. Diagnosed before the age of 50, and he was at stage 3. He wasn't even due for screening. My cousin, colon cancer at the age of 50, died at the age of 50, you know, wasn't even up for screening at that time. By the time it was found, it was super advanced.
So what do we do? 45, 40?
Yep. Moved to 45. And the other thing we do now is if you have a family history, then you take it approximately the same age, if not 5 years before, when they were diagnosed. So if your father, we'll say, was diagnosed at 50, you should be going at 40 or 45, just because we know that you have a propensity for it because of your genetics.
Doc Most, last week we talked about an at-home sort of colon cancer test, and this idea that there seems to be other alternatives besides the colonoscopy as a first measure. Do you subscribe to that, to the idea that the technology is advancing and we might be able to do other things besides the colonoscopy?
Absolutely, Justin, 100%. You know, the people that don't like the colonoscopy, they just say, you know what, I'm not going to have it done, whether
Wait
it's
a second.
Cost.
Who likes the colonoscopy?
Well, there is a society. It's a small society of people that love a colonoscopy. It's a very small.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a very good point, Barry. But the test that Justin's talking about, Cologuard, you probably have seen the ads for it recently, mainly because it's Colon Awareness Month. And actually, the Champions Tour golf tournament this week was sponsored by Cologuard. But that's a test where you can
see
do
the
it
trophy.
At home. You can do it at home. You mail it in, and what they're looking for is DNA. And if it's found to be positive, you need to have a colonoscopy, because at that point now we can tell where the tumor is and sometimes remove it. But if it's negative, then you're on a 3-year screening process with the Cologuard. And we're just hoping that it's more awareness and you have more people doing the screening that aren't going to do it because they won't have the colonoscopy.
Where do you buy the test?
You can buy it. Well, you have to have a prescription for it, so talk to your doctor because the results have to go someplace. And then they'll mail it right to your house, and you mail it right back to them. And it's a very simple thing. And it's a little pricey, but less than a colonoscopy, so you're starting to see more and more people use it.
Mark Carmen.
I've got family history here, Doc, and I've had, I'm 45, I've had it done twice.
You've had two colonoscopies?
I've had two colonoscopies.
Both clean?
Both clean, but I'm curious, like, is there danger in doing it too often for those of us who tend to be a tad bit neurotic?
No. So, Mark, it's good that if you have a family history for it, kudos to you for making sure that you follow that screening. So you're probably on a 5-year time frame right now, or 3 to 5. So once they know that you have a family history of it, colon cancer is a slow-growing cancer. It's a cancer that can take anywhere from 5, 10, 15 years to advance. So if you're on a five-year screening plan, then you're going to do fine, and they're going to find it early enough, especially with someone that has a family history. So you don't need to have it every year, but you certainly should listen to your doctor, because I would imagine you're on a 3 to 5 year plan.
For those of you who have listened to me for a long time, you'll remember the Wine Diva. The Wine Diva is this fabulous woman named Christine who used to come in and do the afternoon show with me. And she was a wine expert. Started working at Binney's when she was a kid, learned the wine business. And she could give you expertise on a bottle of cough syrup versus the most expensive bottle of wine you could find. And the audience loved her. Well, she had stage 4 colon cancer. She had a 3% survival rate. And I remember it was Patty Vasquez and I were at the dinner with her, or maybe it was drinks or something. And she looked at both of us and she said, I got a 3% survival rate. Guess what? I'm in the 3%. And she did beat it for 3 years. She eventually lost her fight, but I'll give you a flip side to that because, Doc, you know this. Miracle's happening. You see him every day. Another friend, a prominent guy in town, at stage 4 colon cancer, he's at the 5-year survival rate with stage 4.
Yep.
So earlier the better, but never give up.
Yeah, and you find that those people end up being the hugest, biggest advocates and push people to do it. You know, Eddie Olchek, you listen to him talk about it, and you're like, wow, how stupid are we if we don't have this done? And people say, well, you know, I don't like the PrEP. And I say, well, I assure you that surgery and chemotherapy is a lot worse than the PrEP.
Yeah.
And having the test done.
Doc, we talked, about early screening, but what about preventative measures when it comes to the risk factors? Or we've learned about lung cancer and smoking and other. Are there correlations to some of the things that we are doing as human beings in colon cancer?
Absolutely. You know, if you look at it and say, let's compare our diet to the diet in Africa. Let's compare our demographics to the demographics in Africa, because in Africa we have extremely low rates of colon cancer. But yet here, the epidemic we have with obesity, we have a high-fat diet. We live in a place where, you know, not a lot of vitamin D in the winter. All of those are kind of risk factors for it. Low-fiber diet as well. And then we also have more people that smoke and drink here. All of those things are going to be the chance that's going to increase your risk of colon cancer. Compare it to individuals in Africa who live on a high-fiber diet, get a lot of exercise, don't smoke, don't drink, and look at their incidence of colon cancer. So unfortunately, environmentally and some of the things we do socially increase our risk dramatically in colon cancer.
We have some text questions I want to get to in a second, but what's the difference between a colonoscopy and a sigmoidoscopy?
So colonoscopy sees the entire colon. A sigmoidoscopy only sees up through the sigmoid portion of the colon. So it's missing about a quarter to half of the colon. So it's great because the vast majority of those tumors are in the distal, the end portion, but it doesn't give you the full screening to get to see the entire colon. But some family doctors will do sigmoidoscopies, where almost all the colonoscopies are done by GI doctors. So if you have that opportunity to get it and you can't get a colonoscopy, please go ahead and at least get the sigmoidoscopy.
And there's a CAT scan colonoscopy?
There is a CAT scan colonoscopy. I think you're going to start to see that is going to be perfected more and more. We'll start to get more and more better imaging. People also talk about the capsule colonoscopy, where you used to swallow this camera, which they've shown is good for looking at the upper portion of the intestines, but not the lower portion.
Is there an app we could do this? Just hold your phone up to your butt or something?
Exactly.
We'll come back with more in a moment and get these text questions on with Dr. Kevin Most. Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, rejoins us now. All right, Doc, we got a bunch of people texting in. They want to know answers to questions like chronic GI issues. Are those folks more at risk for colon cancer?
Absolutely. So people that have Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, absolutely. It seems to be that the inflammation in the intestines there can cause an increase in the incidence of colon cancer. So if you have Crohn's or you have ulcerative colitis, your GI doctor should be all over that, making sure that you're screened much earlier.
If you're eating whole foods, plant-based, no added oil and sugar, do you still need to do the testing?
Absolutely. You still need to do the testing because there's still a genetic portion of it. And you're still are going to, you were still exposed to other foods early in your life. So if we change our dietary habits now, unfortunately, we had 20 years before, 30 years before, probably bad dietary habits where we are exposed to processed foods and high fat foods. And like I said, this is a tumor that grows over 10 to 15 years. It's not something that you can, you know, stop doing something today and say, I'm have no more chance or risk.
So, Doc, most of my, you know, my sister has ulcerative colitis, so she's been getting regular colonoscopies since she was 18, and they always remove the polyps. Do polyps always turn into cancer?
They don't always turn into cancer, but they certainly have a high incidence of it. So you don't want to leave those, you know, so they'll definitely take those away because those are almost always precancerous lesions. Some polyps they'll look at and say, well, there wasn't a lot of cancer or precancerous growth there, but had they left that there a few years later, you would have. So you, that's why the beauty of a colonoscopy can not only be diagnostic, in other words, telling us you have cancer, but can also be a treatment for it because they can remove those polyps and essentially take the cancer out of your body at that time.
847 texter, a colonoscopy is dangerous. My sister refused to get one. She's afraid of a perforated colon. Was I in a band called Perforated Colon? Pretty sure I was.
Now, there are some risks with a colonoscopy, and certainly a perforation is one of them. But in the right hands, that happens extremely rarely. And I can tell you, like I said before, I'd rather have the colonoscopy than the surgery where they'll do a perforation for you, as a matter of fact, and take out a portion of your colon and then chemotherapy. So the incidence of side effects and bad outcomes in colonoscopy is extremely low. We probably do, here at this hospital, I bet you we do 50, 60 colonoscopies every single day. I can't tell you the last time we had a complication here.
Yeah. Doc Mose, we talked about the
day.
I know, it's crazy.
You're like the Costco of colonoscopies.
I know.
Yeah.
Risk factors. We talked risk factors, but what can we do to prevent being at risk for colon cancer?
Yeah. And there are some things. Obviously, we talked to you a little bit about changing your diet, but I think one of the things that's probably most interesting is aspirin. You know, you should talk to your doctor in case you have a chance of having a GI bleed, but if not, everyone should be taking aspirin, not only for their heart benefit of it, but it also decreases your risk of colon cancer by 40%. Don't smoke if you're a smoker. Decrease your alcohol use. And probably one of the biggest things, and it's really interesting that we don't think about this, is get out of a sedentary lifestyle. A study was showing that people that sat and watched TV for more than an hour, more than 2 hours, the risk of colon cancer goes up dramatically. So two things happen there if you're not sedentary. Your obesity, chance of obesity goes down, as well as keeping your weight at a level that is going to be appropriate for you.
A couple other text or questions. Does insurance cover Cologuard, or is it just some insurance?
Some insurances cover Cologuard. And it really is going to depend on your plan. You're going to start to see more and more cover it because they know that the screening there will be done, for one thing, and two, is less expensive than a colonoscopy.
What's the out-of-pocket cash if you have to pay for it?
You know what? That's a good question, but it varies from insurance to insurance. You know, some people with high deductibles are going to be paying the full boat. Other people are going to stay. The ACA, the American, you know, the Affordable Care Act, mm-hmm. says, "Hey, screening for colon cancer has to be covered." So, look at your insurance plan. But the vast majority of these are going to be covered.
How often are we taking this aspirin?
You're taking aspirin daily. So if you take you should be, Mark, I can't believe you're not, to be honest with you. You should be taking either.
You're going
to
give him a heart attack.
I take a baby aspirin every day. I've got some extras. I can be your dealer.
Yeah.
For reals?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. How often? Every day?
Every day.
It's just one baby aspirin a day. Suck it up there, friend.
Yep. I want a pill a day. Okay, Doc, if you say so, though.
But baby aspirins, Mark, they're really small. You don't have to worry about it.
Right.
We'll put it in a cracker with peanut butter. That's how we give it to you.
A couple more, Doc. Is there a relationship between, I don't know how to pronounce this, pilonidal cysts and colon cancer? P-I-L-O-N-I-D-A-L.
Correct. No. So pilonidal cyst is a cyst that's essentially it's an infection that comes from a tract off of your intestines. But there's no increased rate if you had a pilonidal cyst and colon cancer.
Last question. Sandberg told me the prep's easier now.
The prep is easier. I mean, you used to be drinking these big gallon jugs of something called Go Lightly, and now, you know, the prep is much easier, and it's not fun, I can assure you. But I can tell you the person that has the great prep will also make sure that they have the best outcome with their colonoscopy.
You know, the idea that it's called Go Lightly is one of the most misnamed products in history.
Go heavily.
Mary, what was your concern?
Oh, I just wanted to say I saw your beautiful mother at church on Saturday.
Oh.
Yeah. And we walked into church, and she's like, Mary?
She is the best of the most. There's no question about it.
And she says, so she was in town for a baby shower or a bridal shower or something, and she stopped into St. Alexander to go to church.
Correct. My my goddaughter actually had a wedding shower.
Oh, okay. That's where she was.
Yep. Claire, my goddaughter, is going to get married in May. So,
well, you know, I'm available.
Very excited. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Internet ordained.
Yep.
Don't just go with a church if you feel like you want to go lightly.
Is Mark looking at you just shaking his head like?
No, Chelsea's on board. Mark's the one that's hedging his bets.
Hey, Kev, will you stay on hold? I want to ask you, a listener has another question.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Coming up, Stories of Matter with, thank you, Doc. Coming up, Stories of Matter with Steve Gozanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, next on WGN.
We are gathered here tonight to complete the political revolution we started 3 years ago. 3 years ago, they thought we were kind of crazy and extreme. Not the case anymore. 3 years ago, the ideas that we brought forth here in Illinois and all over the country were rejected by Democrats. Not anymore. We have begun the political revolution, and now we're going to complete it.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
7:13. Ryan, I mean, nobody works harder than Ryan Nobles. He makes Wolf Blitzer look like a slacker. Welcome.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Steve, because I was on with Wolf about a week ago, and he was talking about the grind of the campaign and asked me if I was prepared for the grind of the campaign. And he was like, you know, I've been through all of that before. And I'm like, yeah, I know, Wolf. He was like, you know, I worked in the Bill Clinton administration. I go, I know. He goes, we used to take day trips to Kosovo. That's what it was like covering the Bill Clinton White House. So it's not as if Wolf hasn't done his time, that's for sure.
I don't know anything that Wolf hasn't done.
No, he's been around the world. Yeah, no doubt. And he's still going strong.
And he's a good guy. And he's part of the Grandfather Club now.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I see him at all the meetings.
Yeah.
How's your family? You have four kids.
Yes, I do.
Ages?
9, 8, 6, and 2.
So your wife's a saint?
Yeah, indeed. She's a saint at the highest level. So she tolerates these travel schedules as well as anybody. I was talking to her last night because Bernie's going to Iowa next week, which is probably going to mean another couple of days away from me, and she was like, you didn't tell me he was going to Iowa, and I said, I just said it on television, weren't you? Didn't you watch? She goes, well, I didn't process that you were going to I need you to tell me directly. I can't get that news through the television, which I think is probably a fair
request on her part.
Yeah.
Two girls, two boys.
Yep. So girl, boy.
Well, look at that.
Yeah, yeah.
And do any of the kids care that you're on TV?
So it's interesting. My daughters think it's cool. The 2-year-old, it's just starting to get into his consciousness, so like my wife will ask where he is, and Dad's at ENN is how he says
right.
But my 8-year-old boy is like the contrarian of the family, so he like goes out of his way to not be interested in the fact that I'm on television.
I love that.
And then if, you know, if anybody ever asks him, are you going to be a reporter like your daddy when you grow up? No, I am not going to be a reporter. I'm going to be a paleontologist. I'm not going to waste my time being a reporter. So that's kind of his MO.
The fact that he can pronounce paleontologist.
Exactly.
Where do you get the dinosaur interest? Just it stuck from when he was little?
Yeah, just like, you know, like going to museums and stuff. Obviously, in D.C., we've got access to a lot of great museums.
Sure.
And, you know, he loves, he reads like crazy. So, you know, he reads all kinds of books about dinosaurs and, something that he had from an early age.
I don't know if you're going to have time to do this, but if you go by the Field Museum on the way to the airport this morning, it's legendary for Sue. What kind of dinosaur was Sue?
T-Rex.
Oh, that's like the big T-Rex,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure he knows all about
you. Got
yeah.
a gift shop there with something you could suck him into your world where he'd drop his guard for a minute and go, Dad, is cool.
Dad, you're the best reporter of all time. Every time I leave, they're like, are you going to bring us back anything? And I'm always like, well, only if Mommy says you're good. And it's rare that I'm able to bring them back
anything.
You were
at Navy Pier.
I mean.
They got like 17 tchotchke shops at Navy Pier. You've
What's that
the boat
like
there.
When you get home and they're like, well, sorry, you guys weren't good? I mean, but that's a
well, it's like when I first started traveling a lot for my career, most of my career was in local TV, which was, I did not, require me to venture out much beyond the confines of the market I was working in. So when I first started traveling for CNN, it was like, oh, I'll bring you back all this stuff, kids. And it was like exciting. And then my wife and I got into this thing where like, okay, you're going to be traveling a lot. And if you keep bringing home crap from all these different cities, it's like, we're going to have a lot of crap around the house. And then there's always going to be this expectation. So it's like now the bar has to be pretty high for me to bring
back. Well, the problem is when you're traveling, right, you got to have something where you bring back, you got four kids.
Yeah.
So you have to have four small things that can travel.
Yeah, exactly.
But they have to be cool enough that they're still impressive.
Right.
And as much as you're traveling, that's a high bar.
Yeah. And I'm very much of the, I don't check anything because I want to be off the plane and to where I need to go quickly as humanly possible. So I have a finite amount of space. And, my kids do not care about t-shirts. I mean, t-shirts are like the easiest thing you can get anywhere. If I bring them home a t-shirt,
okay.
Like, oh my gosh, it's like you wasted your time. So
tell you a quick funny story about dad's traveling. A friend of mine had six kids. It was a big deal at MTV Films. I think it was Universal Studios. They had just opened a Harry Potter gift shop. This was a couple years ago now. And he wanted to buy some things for the kids from the Harry Potter gift shop. And he goes in, he's trying to buy some things, and there's a nice UCLA co-ed that can't figure out the register, having trouble checking them out. Well, this particular gift shop was famous for a commissary in the corner that made the best smoothies in all of Hollywood.
Yeah.
So he's starting to get that trickle of sweat down his back because he knows he's holding up the line.
Uh-huh.
He turns around, and waiting behind him is Clint Eastwood. And Clint Eastwood looks at him and goes, I guess you like the Harry Potter, huh?
That's fantastic.
718, Ryan's in town because Bernie Sanders is in town. You were in Brooklyn with him on Saturday at Navy Pier last night. Was the response as big as we hear?
It was unbelievable, and we were expecting huge crowds. He drew massive crowds all throughout 2016. But I think a lot of the questions around Sanders right now is, can he continue the momentum that he had 4 years ago and then build upon that momentum? And I think the early reviews are that base of support that he had 4 years ago still exists and is still as passionate as they were. I mean, that's completely evidenced by the amount of money he's raised, more than $10 million in a little more than a week. And then in these two big rallies, now granted, they were hotbeds of his type of politics. Brooklyn is like Bernie Sanders Central. That's where...
And you can find a Democrat or two in Illinois.
Exactly. Yeah. So, he needed to draw big crowds here.
Sure.
He needed to meet those expectations, but I don't think there's any doubt that he met those expectations in both places.
Off the record, behind the scenes, are his people as surprised?
I think... They surprised, I don't know if it's the right word that I would use, but they are relieved, I guess, might be the way to say it. Like, they expected him to do well, but you never know until you actually put on the event and you bring the people out. I think the biggest thing his advisors were most concerned about is that they're trying to push Bernie into a place that he's uncomfortable with, and that's talking about himself personally. Mm. He's easy. He can talk about the evils of capitalism and the need for universal health care. That's all in his wheelhouse. That comes out like a fountain. When you ask him to talk about his personal story, which is a pretty compelling personal story that a lot of people don't know about, that puts him in an uncomfortable place. And that's what he did last night. His time in Chicago at the University of Chicago in the 60s was right in the middle of the civil rights movement.
Right.
He was one of the first student activists to hold a sit-in in the North. He went to the Martin Luther King speech, the I Have a Dream speech. He was there for that. He organized a protest where they actually did an investigation into unfair housing practices in Chicago. So he never talked about those things. And, particularly, he had a problem with African-American voters in 2016. Hillary Clinton basically ran the table with black voters, particularly in the South. He knows he needs to do better there. And his black supporters, Nina Turner's one of them, Sean King, they're saying, hey, Bernie, you have a story to tell here. The African-American voter will connect to you if you can tell that story.
Right.
And what was interesting last night was, he he's all in on the talking points. His greatest hits, he nails them and is passionate about it. You can tell he's doing it, but it's not necessarily a place he feels comfortable going.
Well, I thought the clip that Joe played just about all the things that the Sanders campaign stood for in 2016, the Democrats are going for in 2020. If you see all the candidates, they're speaking Bernie Sanders' language. There's some truth to that, that Bernie Sanders is probably more equipped to be Bernie-like than the other candidates that are trying to adopt that.
Well, here's the thing. This is how he starts every speech. He says, folks, when we started this revolution 4 years ago, people said we were radical. We're not so radical anymore. And he's absolutely right. When you talk about, you know, Medicare for all, you know, Hillary Clinton was just talking about strengthening Obamacare. She wasn't talking about, you know, nationalized health care, which is what Sanders is pushing. When you talk about a $15 minimum wage, when you talk about free college tuition, these were all things that mainstream Democrats were very concerned about pushing as an agenda item because they just didn't think the vast majority of the country was behind them on these points. Now, it's basically the price of entry in the Democratic field. You need at least those three big issues. You need to be where Bernie was originally if you're going to play in this field. And so I think there's this kind of conventional wisdom like, well, okay, that's great that Bernie came there, but let's find a candidate of color. Let's find a woman. Let's find somebody a little bit younger to sell that message. And what I found, and granted, I've kind of been living in the Bernie bubble here for the last 2 weeks, is that the Bernie Sanders supporters they recognize this was the guy that was there first. We're going to ride this train until there's a reason to get off.
He will be 79 years old on Election Day next year. We got to talk about that. Also, you have to explain to us how cranky old Jewish guy from Vermont continues to relate in ways to people that really shouldn't get him on any level.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Got to get most valuable person on the planet here in just a second. Brian Noble's here from CNN. All right, so Bernie's going to be 79 on Election Day. Joe Biden, who I've admitted a million times I'm a very big fan of, he'll be 77. What would a stronger ticket be, Biden, Beto, or Bernie, Kamala, Bernie, Cory Booker?
Great question. I don't know how much the second person on the ticket really matters in the grand scheme of things.
Well, what I'm saying is you got an old guy.
Right.
So you got an old guy who could die in office, literally.
Yes.
So since that's the case, do you counterbalance it with somebody interesting and young or somebody of color?
Bernie himself has already said that he would be looking for someone not of his gender to be a running mate, which would indicate a woman, and likely he would pick a minority as well. So that, you know, that whittles down the potential field right there. I think that they're going to have to signal that in some way, but, you know, honestly, and I can't speak to Biden's base of support yet because I don't know where it exists. But with Bernie, I talked to so many young people over the past 2 days at these rallies.
They love him.
And I asked that specific question. What is it about this 77-year-old guy that attracts you? And it's funny, I'm in my 40s. You know, I see this kind of disparity. But, 22-year-olds don't seem to even think of that as being weird. I just like this guy because I like the views that he espouses, and those are what I'm connected to, and that's why I'm going to support him. So they don't seem to see it. It doesn't seem to matter to them. But, you know, obviously once you get into a general election, you got to concern yourself more than just with that rabid base of support that you had during a primary. So I think to your point, I think that there will be some requirement to balance a ticket in some way.
We'll get to how do you pay for it. In other words, everything on the far left that they want to do, because that question is certainly out there. Though debt doesn't seem to matter anymore. The latest in Trumplandia and all of that. But first, let's say hi to the most valuable person on the planet, Dwayne Campbell. Dwayne, welcome back.
Thank you.
It's your second appearance on the show. You must have done well the first time.
Oh, yeah. Did well the first time and the second time.
Dwayne Campbell of Hy-Vee Store on Park Avenue in Des Moines has been crowned 2019 Best Bagger of the Year by the National Grocers Association.
Impressive.
Way to go, bud.
How long have you worked at Hy-Vee?
For 13 years.
And what makes you, I know I've asked you this before, so pretend I didn't, what makes you a champion bagger?
Just my practice, determination, and hard work that I put into it.
You outperformed 22 other baggers. Were you nervous?
And by the way, no slouches. These are some of the best baggers there is.
These are the best baggers out there.
I was extremely nervous. You know, in the back when you're waiting with all the baggers waiting to go up there, you know, the intensity is high. Everybody's doing their own thing, trying to get hyped up for it. And, you know, you just got to stay focused and just Chuck Ford.
Eye of the Tiger.
Dwayne, with the advent here in Illinois, we don't have as many baggers as we used to because people bring their own bags and they do it themselves.
Right.
Are the old adages of separate the chemicals and the food or put the eggs on the top and the bread over here, is that all standard, or are you a guy who's like, hey, I think of it completely different?
I do like to separate my items. You know, I can't put the chemicals with the cooked food or the raw food, so I separate them. When you have reusable bags, sometimes you got to make choices because you only have so many bags. You know, you can't just give them 9 reusable bags. You only have a few to use, so you got to make choices. And it's like just building a house. You know, you got your walls on the outside with your boxes, you got your cans on the inside, and then you got all your crushables on top. So.
And cold versus hot, how do you feel about that controversy that goes back as long as there's been grocery bagging?
Oh, I hate it. I love my hot food with just by itself, my cold food. Otherwise, it just ruins the food.
Are you the kind of guy, Dwayne, that you wait for all of the items to come to you before you start playing Tetris? Or are you the kind of guy that each item that comes, you know exactly where it's going to go?
I know where it's going to go because I look at the basket prior, and then as soon as it comes to me, I know where it's going to go in the bag, and I know how to organize it.
He sees the field ahead of time. This is why you're the best, man. You're 2 steps ahead of everybody else. Mark Carmen, did you ever bag?
I did, Steve. It's actually a bad memory for me. There was a woman coming with 2 full shopping carts, mm-hmm. and yeah, I freaked out. I went to the bathroom, and I came back, and the store manager was doing the bagging. He said, why did you leave? And I just folded. So I have huge respect.
Bagging panic.
Yes.
Ryan, did you ever work at a grocery store?
No, I worked at McDonald's, so never had the good fortune.
Did you bag well at a McDonald's?
No, I was in the back. They would never let me up front for some reason. So I never bagged anything.
Yeah. So, Wayne, I got one last question for you. They talk about how they judge this, because it's obviously on the speed and the proper bag-building technique. But another area was style, attitude, and appearance. What did you do with style, attitude, and appearance to separate you from the pack?
Well, I put on my Hy-Vee smile that I have every day. That was my good attitude on that. The bag itself, you can't just throw the items on there. You got to make sure they're standing tall, organized, and I think I did that very well. I think everybody else was a little on edge, but...
Sloppy.
Yeah, a little sloppy. Yeah. That's right. And you were wearing a tuxedo?
No, I was wearing my Hy-Vee suit or Hy-Vee dress code and with a red tie going on. Yeah.
Where does this go from here? Can you go pro at another level? I mean, are the Europeans paying more for baggers? What are we doing?
I haven't gone there just yet, but we'll have to see where it leads to.
How old are you?
31.
31. You got a family?
Yes, sir, I do. I have a wife and 2 kids.
Good for you, man.
I think he's technically already professional, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he does get
he's
paid.
A pro now.
Yes.
Yeah. But this is the largest stage you can get on.
Just like on the circuit, you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm saying, you know, there's a competitive market for him
like
right now.
Skaters.
Do you have an agent?
Yeah.
I don't at the moment, but I got a person helping me through all the media stuff. So
you're loyal to Hy-Vee. I would say that the other grocery stores should start
Right. Kroger
putting out feelers.
In. Yeah, Safeway.
Yeah,
there ought to be people fighting over you right now. And by the way, every time I check out and I see 2 just adorable 17-year-olds, a girl and a boy, flirting with each other and ignoring putting the stuff in the bags, I appreciate you even more.
Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks for being on. Appreciate
Congrats.
It. We're going to send you some more Chicago prizes. More with Ryan Nobles in a moment. And your headlines, too, on 720 WGN.
If we stand together, brothers and sisters, the future of this country is extraordinary, and there is nothing we will not be able to accomplish.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Ryan Nobles is here from CNN, and he was with Bernie Sanders in Brooklyn, and Bernie Sanders last night. He's on the Bernie watch for the indefinite future. And we had another candidate announced this morning, John Hickenlooper, former governor of Colorado. What are we at, 15?
I think Hickenlooper makes it 14. It's either 14 or 15, and like with 20 somewhere in that.
So the Democrats learned a lot from the 20 that the Republicans had? So.
Yeah, you know, it's. I think that, you know, this is the perfect scenario for Bernie Sanders. I think every day Bernie Sanders asks for somebody else to get into the race. He's probably calling people, telling them, why aren't you in yet? Because I think the bigger the field,
that's a good point.
The better it is for him, because he has, you know, locked down 30% of the Democratic field. That support's not going anywhere for him. The question has always been for him, can he expand that base? He doesn't need to expand beyond 30% if there's, you know, 20 candidates fighting over the other 70%.
Don't you, though, with
with the specific scenario we're in 20 coming up in 2020, we're Democrats. If he has to expand his message, if he becomes the candidate for 2020, mm-hmm. Democrats don't have a lot of choices. It's not like you're going to see people going, well, let's hear this acting president. Who's in the office now? Yeah, right. Let's hear what he has to say. They're going to vote for a Democrat.
Well, yeah, I don't think the issue for him is can he marshal Democratic support in the general election. It's whether or not he can kind of unite all the factions, the dispirited factions of the Democratic Party in the nominating process. And by the way, he's not the only one that has to deal with that. Yeah, you know, right. the same issues that Bernie deals in terms of bringing in Hillary Clinton supporters, the moderate wing of the party, the corporate Democrats, those are the same problems that Kamala Harris and Cory Booker and Kirsten Gillibrand have on the other side in terms of winning over his support. So, I mean, we've talked about this on this show a lot about how the factions within the Democratic Party are as real as the factions within the Republican Party. The only difference between the two is that the Democrats have this unifying force of defeating Donald Trump. So, but, you know, that only takes you so far in a presidential election. I always go back to the 2004 election where the Democrats' message was, we need to beat George W. Bush. It was never about electing John Kerry. And we saw how that worked out.
Well, if you got 35 on the left, 35 on the right, and 30 in the middle, the 30 in the middle should be the ones that decide who wins, because Trump is going to stay between 35. You know, again, I go back to the Nixon example. When Nixon resigned and left office, he still had 30% support.
Right, right, right.
So those people are going to be there. As Justin just said, the Democrats are going to be there. So tacking this far left, the standard operating procedure is you go far left or far right, then you go to the middle afterwards and pretend you didn't go far left or far right,
right.
Once you're the nominee. But you go this far left, it's a long way back to the middle.
Right. And so the argument that they're going to try and make is that these new left-leaning progressive policies are actually where the mainstream of America is.
And that's not true.
And that, I think, might be a difficult argument to make. You know, I think that they're all so concerned about, you know, tamping down this kind of progressive insurgency that they've all rushed to these issues as a way, it's almost like a jackrabbit, to try and get out ahead of it with the hope that they can marshal the support necessary to then pivot back to the middle by election day. But if you're talking about a bruising year and a half long Democratic primary where you're fighting over these issues and it goes right up until the convention, which is a certainly a possibility,
sure,
it's going to be very difficult to tack back to the middle and then talk about things like debt and national security and things that Democrat, you know, a Joe Biden type candidate is going to talk about those things. Where last night, Bernie Sanders is talking about how the military industrial complex is a huge problem and we're spending way too much money on the military. We should be spending it on other things.
You peel off, and people who do more math have done this, but you peel off the alleged excess money being spent on the military. It still doesn't pay for Medicare for all and college education for all.
Right. So the big argument that Bernie Sanders is making is that we need to raise taxes. And, you know, he'll couch it in...
People love that.
Yeah, right. You know, he's going to couch it in, well, we need to raise taxes on a specific set of people, meaning really, really wealthy people. But even, you know, most independent economic analysts are going to tell you that even if you lopped on a 50% corporate tax rate, or if you, you know, heavily tax the highest earners, you know, the top 1%, as he often talks about, that's still not nearly enough to pay for even one of these big promises he's making. Medicare for all being one example, but let's also talk about free college tuition across the board. Do you know how expensive that is? You know, a $15 minimum wage also doesn't come cheap.
No.
And then, you know, the Republican argument to this as well is, what does that do to stifle economic growth if you rein in if you raise taxes and then pull back on some of these tax cuts that have been in place? So I had an interesting conversation with my reporting colleague, Greg Krieg, who writes for our website, and he's also covering Sanders. And we talked about, like, you know, the real tangible outcome of this election, I think, regardless, if any Democrat wins, there's going to be some sort of change to the tax code, right? They're either going to raise taxes in some respect, or they're going to repeal some of these corporate tax rates. The question is, what are they going to then do with that money? Well, they're probably not going to pay down the debt. They're going to spend it on something else.
Right.
So this, you know, this looming debt problem is honestly something that neither party seriously
wants.
I was
going to say that the contrast has always been when Democrats say that they want to do these things, free health care or free college tuition. The contrast from the Republican side is, where are you going to get the money? We need to be fiscally prudent. We can't have the debt. But what we've seen in the Trump administration is a disregard for that.
Yeah.
He's spending money that he didn't have, and he's moving stuff around, and the debt continues to go up. Does that hurt
the, I mean, or does it help Bernie Sanders in the way that, that Americans go, well, it doesn't seem, there isn't a contrast anymore. It just seems we could spend.
I don't think there's any doubt that Republicans have lost a moral high ground when it comes to debt politics. I don't think there's, I mean, how you can make the argument that you care about the debt when you put in place a tax cut that is so dramatic without the commensurate spending cuts, and, you know, with the projections that it was going to balloon the debt. I mean, Republicans have been saying, going back to Nixon, that the way you pay for tax cuts is through economic growth. It hasn't happened yet.
Right.
There's literally no example of the course of American history where significant tax cuts have led, have been paid for with economic growth. You know, the, you know, if you are truly going to be anti-debt, and I, you know, Rand Paul is probably the most pure on this, you need to add a spending cut. For every tax cut you put in place, you need to add a spending cut. Now, politicians hate cutting things, and that the simple fact is they can talk to their blue in the face about cutting taxes and reforming entitlements and all these different things. They never have the guts to do
it. Yeah, and the thing is, you could, you know, I think there's truth in the fact that Democrats don't have to worry about saying we spend, but you can't run on, hey, they do it too.
Right, no, that's, you know, 100%
that's not a campaign slogan.
Yeah.
All right, I got to talk to you about Trump while we still have a few minutes here.
The attorney general says I'm going to recuse myself. And I said, why the hell didn't he tell me that before I put him in? How do you recuse yourself?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
6 round texter just sent a good idea at 312-981-7200. I'll expand on it just slightly, Ryan Nobles. And that is that Bernie Sanders, starting immediately, should say Mexico will pay for college for all. And stick with it and say it over and
just
over.
Say it over and
who's going to pay for college for all? Mexico! It's a tremendous
idea. That is actually the most innovative suggestion I've heard yet.
That's a brilliant audience, I'll tell you that right now. All right, so Donald Trump goes to CPAC, this annual convention of the far right, and does a speech that's more like a concert. Springsteen called and said, why don't you tone it down just a little bit and get off? 2 hours and 8 minutes
or something. Longest speech of his presidency. Yeah.
Yeah, threw BS in a couple of times just to class it up.
Yeah, yeah.
And trashed everybody, which again brings up the question, why would anybody, even those that fear him, bet on the fact that he will be loyal to them?
Mm-hmm.
He will throw anybody under the bus. By the way, I believe including his own family, if need be.
Well, that's a great question. I mean, there's simply no evidence that, you know, that Donald Trump is loyal to anyone other than himself. We talked about this a lot of times. You know, there was this narrative during the campaign, like especially like when Chris Christie endorsed him early on. He was one of the first people to, and everybody's like, well, Christie's doing this because Trump prizes loyalty. Well, I think we see how that turned out for Chris Christie. He was left on the outside looking in. So, yeah, I mean, it certainly stands to reason, you know, if you're somebody that's thinking about working for Donald Trump, if you're within his inner circle right now, you know, you need to watch your back, because if he starts to feel like he's being brought down, which, you know, all the signals are pointing in that direction, he'll throw anybody overboard if it means saving himself.
Right.
You know, my question just is, a poll just recently came out and said 90% of Republicans are in support of Donald Trump, that they like what he's doing with border security, they like what he's doing with foreign affairs. So how does that gel when you have something like the speech that we had and the questions about loyalty, but the Republican Party and the Republican voters are eating it up?
Yeah, I mean, rank and file Republicans are still with Donald Trump. I mean, there's no question about that. And, you know, there will be all this noise about potential challengers, you know, Larry Hogan in Maryland, who's, you know, pretty liberal for the Republican base that I'm familiar with. You know, does John Kasich, somebody like that, get in the race? I mean, there's just simply no appetite for that in the Republican Party. The rank and file Republicans are generally happy with Donald Trump. Are they happy with everything about him? Not necessarily, but they like the policies that he's pushing. The immigration has become an enormously important issue to Republicans. And I mean, and you just, like, if you, you know, like, I use my Twitter feed as kind of a snapshot of what's happening in the world, which is maybe a bad idea, but, you know, I try and follow a lot of diverse opinions, and it was incredible to see conservative reaction to the CPAC speech and liberal reaction to the CPAC speech. You know, liberals acted as if their hair was on fire and this is like an indication of the end of the world, where Republicans, I saw one headline from a Republican writer that said Donald Trump is guaranteed his reelection with this speech. So, you know, there's no better indication of kind of the different factions that the country is kind of positioned themselves in than the way people are responding to Donald Trump.
It's like when Fraser Crane, if you remember Cheers, looked at Cliff at the bar and said, Cliff, what color is the sky in your world? world. I mean, it's amazing. It's just amazing. Yeah. What we see and what we say are so different. Ryan Nobles, great to see you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome here anytime.
Well, I hope you know how much of a pleasure it is for me to be on your show every week.
You're a good man. You're a good man. And I look forward to coming and staying with you and your family.
Anytime. You guys, I will please return the favor whenever you're in Washington.
Actually, it'd probably be good if I babysat. You and your wife could go out for a nice evening, right? I'm great with kids.
Yeah. You'll be glad that part of your life is in the past.
enjoy your time in Chicago the last few hours here, and go get your kid a dinosaur souvenir.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Ryan Nobles at Ryan Nobles. All over social media, and we're back after this.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah.
The audience loves Ryan Nobles. Little texter saying they love Ryan. So smart and quick. Handsome devil, too. And a nice guy. Thanks again to Ryan Nobles from CNN for coming in live. We don't always, even the regulars, we don't always see them. And he's based in D.C., so it's nice to see him in Chicago. Dean Richards joins us now because it's more on entertainment time. Good morning to you.
He's got a nice smile on him.
Yeah, very toothy.
Very toothy, friendly.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's a high V smile.
Oh, I don't
like
know.
Like our MVPP earlier today.
We had the high V championship bagger on, and he said he wears a high V smile.
What's a high V smile?
High V, H-Y-V-E-E. It's the big Iowa grocery store.
Oh.
Yeah.
Steve Cochran then told us all we had to wear the Steve Cochran smile, but that's a little different.
Well, the funny thing is I told Super Joe, and Super Joe said, and let me just quote him now, no. So I was listening to you on the radio yesterday because that's where you were working.
I was here,
and you were talking about the Kiss concert Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And you were.
Did I sound like I was there?
You sounded so much like you were there, but you were quoting some Kiss lyrics. And I have a theory that if you're 70 years old and you're still putting makeup on for work, that maybe you need to reassess. But these guys are still killing it.
Yeah, they're in their upper 60s, but they may as well be 70s. They're like 68, 69.
You get one big part of that, though. They get paid.
A lot.
So, yeah, if you were 60 plus in the 70s and you had to put makeup on and you got paid a lot, would you keep doing it?
I don't think Gene Simmons, who's a cranky guy anyway, don't think Gene Simmons is sitting there going, oh, crap.
Give me the mascara. It makes me sad that they have to do that. And it's not just the makeup. I mean, the outfits that they wear,
right?
They look like they're tremendously heavy. They wear those big, gigantic shoes.
Yeah.
It cannot be easy to rock and roll all night and party every day.
It's funny you mention that because I do have some samples of great Kiss lyrics. Give me a little Dr. Love. Again, Dean, that's so call me Dr. Love. They call me Dr. Love, calling Dr. Love. I'm your doctor of love, calling Dr. Love.
Yep. Irving Berlin would be proud.
How about a little, Joe, give me a little bit of I Was Made for Loving You. Remember the... These are actual lyrics. Let me give you a little bit of this, Dean. It's do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I'm reading this verbatim. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Tonight I want to give it all to you in the darkness. There's so much I want to do. And tonight I want to lay it at your feet, because, girl, I was made for you, and, girl, you were made for me.
So it's kept bringing them back for 40 years.
And the classic, and you just mentioned this, how about a little rock and roll all night?
Every day.
Yes.
I wanna rock and roll all night.
And party win? That's right. Every is a three-syllable word.
Every day.
Oh, that's the greatest.
Wearing my Lorelei t-shirt.
You keep on shouting. Woo!
No Lick It Up lyrics?
Now, we're going to do Lick It Up, and I looked at it, and I thought Prince would find this dirty. So a little bit of Kiss.
That was my favorite Carpenter song, Lick It Up.
Lick It Up. That? Oh, they did a great job on that. That was a cover, wasn't it? A cover of the Kiss song?
Cover version. Yeah. They were trying to be hip.
So, but you should hear the Dean Richards extravaganza every Sunday because you and your friends there, Dean, you guys are very.
It's a silly time. My favorite part of the show yesterday, as talk show hosts, we're extremely sensitive about, how interviews should go, and if we happen to be guests on somebody else's show, we're like very particular. I was a guest on Justin when he was on at night on the download.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, and we had a nice time. But when you are a host and you are the guest, you're especially sensitive to what the host is going through. Unless you're Larry Potash, who stiffed me yesterday.
No,
it was supposed to be a guest on the show.
I heard you promoting that. He didn't call.
No, we couldn't find him. We called all of his phone lines. Something came up with his family. Nothing emergency.
Oh, it should have been.
It just slipped his mind. I would have lied and said it was a blood curdling emergency. Right. But he was honest and just said it slipped his mind. So I'm going to pretty much give him crap on that for the next 12 years.
How much apology did you get from him? Did you get the full-throated apology, or did you get the "I'm sorry, you're upset"?
No. He was legitimately sorry, and actually, when he came to work this morning, went way out of his way to come over here by my desk to apologize to me again.
And normally, he doesn't even look you in the eye, does he?
No, normally I'm not allowed to look at him in the eye.
Wow.
You're not allowed to do that. So I am going to...
I'm deeply disappointed in him as well.
I'm going to bring this up many, many, many times.
All right, here's what's coming up. And speaking of guests on your show, I'm going to pitch you on an idea, and you're free to say no.
No.
Well, not until you hear the idea.
Oh.
The Michael Jackson documentary, Johnny Depp getting sued by his ex-wife, and Bobby Moynihan in Chicago. Dean did the sit-down with him. We'll get to all of that coming up. On Sunday, we have the American Lung Association Fight for Air Climb.
Right.
Are you doing a show from there?
Yes.
You are.
Are you eating?
He's yes.
It's probably his apple. It's apple time.
It's not. No, it's not an apple. But
you thought we were going to break, and so you...
I thought he was going to go to a break. That I had a little chewy time.
Is it peanut butter and jelly again?
It's a turkey sandwich.
Turkey.
Today.
Oh, fantastic. We were coming to a break, but feel free.
I didn't know you were going to ask me another question.
So here's the question.
Yes,
question.
I am doing my show at the Presidential Towers.
Right.
In a hidden location, though.
What are you talking about?
Well, nobody should come to try to find it because we're in a hidden location.
You mean like it's an off from where everybody
it's
is?
It's where we are every year, but nobody could ever find it.
So. We're all sweaty and yucky. We like to come in there.
I know you do.
Darn.
I know you all do.
Well, here's why I bring it up. My wife and son are going to be in the event. My sister-in-law and brother-in-law are going to be in the event.
So you're climbing too?
Not a chance. If you'd like, I will come to the event and sit in.
I would love that.
All right, so I'm going to sit in for part of your show whenever, and you can kick me out whenever you want to.
You could stay as long as you'd like, as long as you, since you're not going to be doing any climbing yourself.
No! No, I'm too important to the broadcast.
Is this on doctor's orders that you shouldn't do the climbing?
Actually, it's more on the idea that, I don't want to. That's pretty much it. I don't want to.
Well, here's the thing. You can either climb. How many stairs is it, Mary? You've done this so many
2,100
times.
Or something?
2,430 or something
right.
like that?
Yeah. So you could do that, or you could sit with us and eat breakfast sandwiches.
Yeah, I like your play better.
Oh, I like the breakfast sandwiches.
Yeah.
We'll be there afterwards. We'll find you.
You know, Mayor, Steve, Mike, you know how you think you don't want to be a part of something until you get there, and then you might get the itch.
Oh, I could get caught up.
Yeah.
I could get caught. I could get climbing fever.
Yeah.
I doubt it. We'll come back.
Now, are you saying that you're going to come on the show just so you can stiff me like Larry Potash?
No. I'm actually going to show up because I'm actually your friend. Larry is a fake friend.
And this he has to bring his wife down anyway. So
this is a very clever ruse on Steve's part. I'm going to tell Dean that I'm coming on the show.
We thought it would be funny.
This is going to be a new feature on the Sunday show. Who doesn't show up on the show this week?
Well, you remember once when you got stiffed by a guest, Drew Carey called in and you thought it was somebody else and hung up on him.
I made him wait for about a half an hour on the phone because I thought it was... It wasn't just one guest canceled. All of our guests canceled that morning.
Drew Carey was listening
in Orlando. And Drew Carey happened to be
listening,
and he called up, and I thought it was a listener pretending to be Drew Carey.
What?
So I did make him wait for quite a long time, and he goes, "Wow, you sure made me wait for a long time." This is his exact quote. "I call up to bail your ass out, and you make me wait this whole time."
I love that story. You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9. More on entertainment. Dean Richard back from Channel 9. Larry Potash blew him off yesterday on the show.
So excited that you're going to be on the show, son.
Well, I appreciate you allowing me to come in. It's a big show.
He must be excited because he emailed asking what time you'd be there. So he's already booking
He's
you.
Trying to get me committed in writing, unlike Potash, who wouldn't agree to anything in writing.
No, Potash agreed in writing, too.
Oh, he did.
And still blew me off. Well,
makes it even more painful.
I just want to know what time you're going to be there so I can run out and go get some breakfast and you can do the show.
Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, it'll be 9:30. Look for my arrival at 9:30, provided I can find you.
It's tricky to find us.
Okay. I used to live in Building 1.
Hmm.
Were you in Building 1? What building are you in?
I don't know. We're in the, the office.
The office?
Glass office. It's a glass office, their management office or something.
Why wouldn't you be in the lobby?
That's what I've been saying for about the last 6 years.
You're off the lobby. You're close to the lobby. The lobby's within sight.
Bobby Moynihan was in Chicago Saturday night.
You can't see us. You can't hear it.
The Saturday night.
We may as well be at Willis Tower.
Saturday Night Live, the exhibit, is not going to be in town forever, right?
No, it ends on my birthday, as a matter of fact. That was my birthday present. I asked that they leave town.
And that birthday is when?
March 31st.
Yeah, Larry doesn't want to get you anything. I just want to make sure you knew.
He said that he was going to get me something, but I think that I won't get anything.
Right.
It's a great exhibit, and Bobby Moynihan was so emotional walking through this. He literally was in tears seeing some of the things from the show.
Really?
That he hadn't seen in a long time. Some of the things he had never seen from the 40th anniversary show and some things like that. He walked through and was very, very emotional.
How about that?
We had a fantastic one-hour conversation, and we recorded some of it. One of the things that I asked him were special moments that he had for his 9 years on that show. Favorite guests, special moments. Mm-hmm. This is what he said.
Paul McCartney knowing my name, Paul McCartney walking by and saying, "Hello, Bobby." That was a very weird experience. Sarah Palin walking by. I was the moose in the Sarah Palin weekend update. I was in that moose costume. That was my first update I ever did. John McCain very confidently put his hand on my shoulder and went, "Always a pleasure, Horatio." That was a good one.
Was he kidding?
No. No, he 100% thought I was Horatio Sands.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I get it all the time. Character-wise, like, Drunk Uncle was my favorite to do, obviously. Yeah. Drunk Uncle is pretty much my father. It's pretty much my dad. Just like this lovable man who means well, but maybe doesn't have the right terminology for the time.
Yeah, yeah. Is he honored by that?
I think so, in a way. He has since passed, but he knew. He would give me the, like, "I know what you're doing there."
Dads know when you do stuff like
that. I got to be honest with you. As much as I love Bobby Moynihan, I didn't think he did a great drunk. And I come from the, you know, this is
you
like...
You know drunks.
This is my sweet spot.
Yeah.
You know, I know drunks. And I just didn't think that he captured what it feels like to actually be inebriated.
Yeah. You know what? When we mentioned Drunk Uncle on stage...
People went nuts?
It went, got the biggest...
That was a hugely popular character.
Hugely popular. And, you know that Beyonce spoof that
very
they
funny.
Did with Justin Timberlake and Andy Samberg and...
The
boys were in the tights. Bobby Moynihan wrote that. He wrote that.
No, it's funny.
And it was, you know, they go to meetings earlier in the week and they pitch their ideas. It was turned down. They turned it down initially. And it was because Justin Timberlake wanted to do it that they had to get Beyonce's approval. But the whole thing happened because Beyonce wanted to tape it. Lauren Michaels said, "We don't tape things." Justin Timberlake wanted to do it, so they got to do it, and it's turned out to be one of the most iconic sketches on the show.
What do you mean we don't tape things all the time?
Musical performances.
But it was a bit.
You want to get Lauren Michaels on the phone right now? Argue with him about
it. He used to have his number. I'm sure he's changed.
You can talk to him about the drunk characterization also that he didn't feel was properly portrayed on the show.
Texter just made a good point that I should get a note from Dr. Love excusing me from climbing the stairs Sunday. Thank you, Texter. Johnny Depp suing Amber Heard.
Is suing her for $50 million, his ex-wife.
So the love is gone.
So apparently it's a really amicable divorce so far. He's suing for defamation because she wrote an article in the Washington Post about domestic violence. And while she did not mention him by name, it was more than implied that she was talking about it. Well, that she was talking about him. And so we'll see how that plays out. I don't know how you can prove that if you don't mention somebody by name, but a judge will figure that out someplace.
Well, she had publicly accused him before, so I suppose the extension's not that big a deal. And frankly, from what we hear, Johnny Depp needs the money. And Michael Jackson, the documentary, your thoughts?
Did you see this last night?
I did not. I chose not to, actually.
We watched it, Dean, though.
Oh, my gosh.
Justin and I.
It was riveting.
Yeah.
It was fascinating. It was disturbing. It was icky. As these two guys, now 36 and 40 years old, who were 7 and 10 years old when they caught the eye of Michael Jackson, and they became part of the Michael Jackson inner circle at different times as, you know, his favorite boy to have around, and would, you know, do childlike things, as it was described by their parents, who allowed all of this to happen. And the boys then, as the relationship grew, the boys described in graphic detail sexual abuse that took place on them and was returned to Michael Jackson, of bizarre things like mock weddings. Michael Jackson [S2] Right. [S1] Had a mock wedding to one of the boys, had cardboard cutout of Peter Pan that was used during some of the abuse. It's just really weird and bizarre stuff. The internet, of course, has gone crazy of some people defending him, some people saying that the accusers don't know what they're talking about, that there should, that most of the reaction that I've read is about the parents. What kind of parents leave their 7 or 10 year old little boy alone with a grown man they barely know in his locked bedroom? What the Michael Jackson estate did last night during the documentary, they released a Michael Jackson concert video on YouTube at the exact same time that the documentary was playing, and they're going to do the same thing tonight with part two of the documentary that'll be on HBO. What I'm going to find most interesting is after part two of the documentary tonight, Oprah Winfrey is going to interview the two guys and also the director of the documentary to explain, you know, just to talk about it more, to flesh it out a little bit more. It's fascinating. It's weird.
Hard to watch, right?
It's disgusting. It was very hard to watch, yes.
Back with you more tomorrow. Thank you, buddy.
See you tomorrow, Larry.
No, it's Steve. I'm the one that showed up, or will. Lori Benson's waiting in the PPG Green, Paints Green Room. That's where Ryan Nobles was earlier today, and that's where we put our guests. That's coming up after the 8:30 headlines, which are next.
The Steve Cochran Show.
It is 8:42, and happy to have in studio Lori Benson. She worked with Phil Donahue for quite some time when she was 7.
That's right.
Phil's, are we a senior producer?
Senior producer, yeah.
Oh, I love Phil. How's he doing health wise? He's okay?
He's doing great. He's 82 and in New York and living the life.
Marlo looks fantastic, doesn't
yep.
she?
Yep, she's
amazing.
Yep, and she's busy as ever, so they're doing great.
I don't know how to describe it, really. It's a memoir of an adoption, I suppose, about your own experience, and now you've got a new book out called Adopting Hope, where you talk about adoptees like me and stuff that we went through as a group and try to answer some questions. So tell everybody your background a bit.
Yeah, so I placed a child for adoption in 1981. It was, of course, the most terrible time of my life, and got through it and eventually was reunited. She was age 16, and she looked me up, and I wanted to be found, so it wasn't hard for her.
And what state were you in?
I was in Florida at that point. And
so that would have been 97?
98.
It's pretty progressive for Florida, because I can tell you from my own experience, The country has not made that easy.
Well, Florida really had nothing to do with it.
Oh, really?
Because we went through the cradle here in Chicago, and the records were there. She went to the cradle, and my permission was there. So Florida didn't have to
do it. You were open adoption before it was cool.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, I fought for more openness at the cradle because 6 months after the adoption, I was told it's, you know, the records are now final. But I had exchanged a letter with the adoptive mom, and we had agreed to exchange information. But now it was closed, and they said, we can't do anything. It took 3 years before I was able to get some information.
It's amazing how closed off things still are. New York State's one of the worst, and I've got a niece whose husband's adopted, and he would like to go through the experience I went with, which was a health record search initially.
Mm-hmm.
But the point being, adoptees are entitled to the same thing biological children are entitled to, and that's to know who you are.
Exactly.
And I've told adoptive parents this from the moment all this went down in 2003 for me to today. It's not a risk if you love your kids.
Right.
Your kids are your kids. Your parents are the people that raised you. You still can have a mom and a dad somewhere in the world, and you're entitled to your health record. But you're also entitled to know who you are.
Right. And I think the key to success really is if all parties act out of love and not fear and
right.
not need and not anger or any of those things. If you act out of love, you're going to do the right thing. And the child does have the right to know who they are and where they came from. The birth parents do have rights to, you know, what their decision will be as far as a relationship. But certainly that initial meeting is important to have.
In New York State, there's a registry in Illinois. And I worked with a state rep here, Sarah Feigenholz, to also an adoptee to get a certified birth certificate law on the books, so adoptees could at least have a certified birth certificate, because that opens the door to a lot of things that aren't otherwise open.
Right.
But we need to get to a point where at the bare minimum, health records are accessible without doing a needle in the haystack search, so you understand what your biology is.
Right. Was it easy for you when you were? I didn't know you were adopted when I came here. This is great.
Well, I had a couple of advantages because being a public person, I knew some people, and a private eye got involved, and within 3 weeks, they had some information. And of course, the amazing thing is finding out that my mom was here.
Right.
And sisters were here.
Well, since I've been in Chicago, I have heard some amazing, I think the new thing that's happening are these DNA searches,
mm-hmm.
and I spoke at an event, and several of them had discovered the information through these 123, you know, DNA, Ancestry.com, all those, and it's opening up so much new information.
And really, with less, I don't want to say security, but less borders, boundaries, I guess is the word for it, less boundaries than laws that could be enacted very easily to protect folks. Because
Absolutely.
As you said, birth parents, people who do an adoption, you have rights.
Right.
And there's a million reasons why you do it at the time you do it. And having someone come back into your life, I mean, as you process this throughout your entire life, maybe you haven't told the whole story. Maybe you're with somebody else now.
Right.
I mean, whatever reason.
Right.
You know, you have rights as well.
And it's so personal and so varied in adopting Hope. I have stories from adoptive parents, birth parents, and adoptees, and they give their stories as well as their suggestions, advice, what they learned, what they did right and wrong. And the birth parents, they're all varied. Some of them welcomed this, and it was just a dream come true. And for others, it was the worst nightmare.
Sure.
You know, this had been a secret. Nobody knew. And, you know, it's a shame after I just talked to somebody yesterday. The mother was like 90, and she was still had so much fear about being discovered
about
this.
That, through her whole life.
Yes. And I mean, the birth son is an amazing person, and it would be just such an enhancement to her life. But she can't get past, you know, how terrible time it was way back when.
In the book, Adopting Hope, you lay out a bunch of things here. But when we talk about something as dramatic as meeting a birth parent, there are some things you need to do and not do.
Right, absolutely. Well, I'm so sorry. Absolutely. You have to, when you're searching out, you know, you have to think about all sides, all perspectives, what this person is going through, too. And a lot of the adoptees I've talked to say, you know, you tend to be selfish as an adoptee because you're the center of it all, really. Mm-hmm. But if you can think about everybody else and respect their boundaries, you'll be much more successful, really, in your search. And, you know, obviously you go to where the adoption took place. And, you know, actually, I've heard so many different stories of how people have found. So I don't know if there's like a manual on how to find.
Yeah, there is no one way. My experience is a private investigator, and it's not cheap, but a private investigator, a lot of them are ex-cops. They know how to bend the rules. They know where to search in different places. The internet and DNA tests have made it much easier,
that
as you said.
That is amazing, yeah.
But the one piece of advice I try to pass on to people is don't assume you weren't wanted.
Oh, 100%.
Because that's the easy place to go as an adoptee. Right. Why didn't they want me?
Right.
The assumption should be, why couldn't they keep me? And then have that conversation if you need that for closure.
And also, I think, there's a lot of people who are trying to change this perception. But birth parents, it's the most difficult decision
you can
make. And when you do it, you do it because you love that child. Mm-hmm. So that assumption couldn't be farther from the truth. And
and we live in a world where, and in a country where you can legally end a pregnancy if you truly don't want the baby.
Right.
If you go through the experience of having the baby and trying to find an agency to give the baby a home that you can't provide for whatever reason, of course you wanted the child.
Right.
You just couldn't do it.
Right, exactly. And I think that is changing. There's a lot of campaigns out there now saying, you know, birth parents are probably the most courageous people. I mean, I'm tooting my own horn or anything because it didn't feel courageous at the time. I was filled, racked with guilt, and you know, it was not a heroic moment to me. But in the end, and the way things worked out, she's just got the best family, and we're all blended now.
Isn't that
my
nice?
Daughters are her sisters. It's had a great result. So I think for her, it was absolutely the best decision.
Well, it's been a blessing for me as well because my kids and my granddaughter are all part of this extended family as well. It's all one big family now.
Yes.
So we're blessed. And by the way, it doesn't always work out that way, but that's another reason to get the book, Adopting Hope. You should get three copies, one for you, one for the birth parent, one for the birth mom. You know, get everybody one so they can all read it.
It's a great gift for anybody who has an adoption connection. And, you know, it's also got so much wisdom that could apply to step families, blended families, anything that's kind of a challenge to negotiate.
New family things.
Yes, exactly.
Right? The new
absolutely.
Definition. We'll come back, talk more in a second. Why are you in town, by the way?
I did a speaking engagement at the Cradle in Evanston, and then I'm also speaking down at the Standard Club tomorrow at 11.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool topic.
Excited, yeah.
More on this in a second. Again, the book's called Adopting Hope. Wherever you buy books, you can get it today.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Talking with Lori Benson, former senior producer for Donahue, and a woman who put a child up for adoption, wrote a book about it afterwards, and the gut-wrenching experience it was, and the happy ending about it to have and not to hold. Her new book is Adopting Hope, about all aspects of this. It's completely unfair for me to do this, but in a minute, I want you to tell me how you tell a child they're adopted.
Well, I'll tell you what. You tell them the first minute you have them, and you continue telling them throughout their whole childhood, early, often. I think the biggest mistake and the biggest takeaway from the book for me was people who made the mistake of thinking they need to be ready to hear this, because then it continues and goes on and creates a big problem. If you grow up, my daughter's adoptive mother just did it so perfectly, and it was just part of her narrative. She never didn't know she was adopted, and her mom said, there's papers here, there's letters here.
Yeah.
When you're ready, they're in this drawer.
Right.
When you're ready, you can look. If you're never ready, that's fine, too.
I had a very similar experience, and I agree with you 1,000%. Can people get a hold of you in some way?
Absolutely.
Ask questions?
My website is my name, LoriAntosBenson.com.
Okay.
And contact info is all there.
We'll link us or link you through that and appreciate it. Hope we can talk again.
Absolutely. I'd love it. Thank
congratulations
you.
On the family, first and foremost,
yes.
But congratulations on the book. The new book's Adopting Hope. Steve Grzanich in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next. Carmen, I don't know if you're happy about this or not as you filled in for Dave Ennett today, but we haven't brought up your engagement at all today.
I was expecting it, Steve, that's for sure.
Oh, there's still an hour left in the show.
Yeah, okay, great.
Good for you.
Chicago on vacation.
All right, you planning your vacation? You don't have to go that far. Justin, who's in studio?
Well, excited to bring back in studio Jeffrey Baer, Chicago's unofficial tour guide, who has a new special that is airing.
Shouldn't we make him the official, though? Shouldn't we give him the title?
He should be. How do you get the official? Do you have to get, like, a proclamation from the mayor?
I think you give the proclamation. Oh.
Well, hereby,
I think it just happened.
I'd like to say, Jeffrey Baer.
We take a travel brochure and we tap you on the head as you nod to one knee.
I like the British accent like for that? Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, guy.
I think it's
Chicago?
Funny that you bring that up because in the special, Jeffrey brings up that the Wisconsin Dells is named the water park capital of, and it was named, like, that's what you need, the thing like you get Wisconsin Dells has.
It's a registered trademark, that's all we have to do.
Self-proclamation.
And trademark
that's right.
Office.
That's it. Well, Jeffrey's here with his producer, Eddie Griffin. Eddie, good to see you. Chicago on Vacation is the new special, which airs this week, tomorrow night, on WTTW. Guys, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, everyone.
Always
thanks for having us.
This is one of my favorite subjects because the Midwestern road trip, the idea of going around the lake is one that if you really are truly from Chicago, you have to do this at some point.
Absolutely. Where did you go when you were?
I have, to be honest with you, I have family. Eddie, I was talking. I have family in the Upper Peninsula, and I did it when I was six, something like that. And I've been to that area, but as a dad myself, not done it yet.
No, you got to do it. He did a Circle Lake tour.
He's going to have to go without his wife because his wife is not up for a big road trip.
But he doesn't have to take a 73 Chevy Impala.
No,
is
he
that
does.
Right?
Absolutely.
It looks better, though, when you do that.
It's you're styling.
So where does this idea come from to show Chicago on vacation?
Well, you know, I've been actually pitching this idea for years at WTTW, and it's never kind of moved to the front burner. I've done all these shows over so many years. Eddie's produced many of them. Where we're just kind of showing you the places in Chicago that are in your heart, if you will. And, you know, these vacation places are kind of like an extension of our own hometowns. And Eddie has talked about when we went up to Door County.
Yeah, I think our first real trip was Door County. And, you know, normally when we shoot in Chicago, everyone will recognize us, recognize Jeffrey, the camera
famous.
Equipment. Up there, going into the trip, you think, like, no one's going to, you know, we'll be fine. We'll be able to do what we want. We won't be stopped or bothered. Right away, everyone, oh, WTTW, Jeffrey, you guys are finally doing a show about Door County. You know, and it could have been anywhere, but they felt like a fierce loyalty, fierce pride. These are kind of like these long vacation destinations that you've gone to for generations and generations are like you feel that same pride as if growing up in a neighborhood in Chicago.
So these are the iconic Chicago getaways. Right?
Yeah. I mean, we in Wisconsin, we go to Door County, Lake Geneva, the Dells. I'm missing one other. Northwoods. And then in Illinois, we go to Starved Rock, Galena, the school trip to Springfield. Yeah. I had never been inside the Illinois State Capitol. Oh, my God.
Nice, right? You did all the painting tours.
Louis XIV designed it or something. Yeah. And then we go to the Indiana Dunes. We go to a place, I'm going to confess to, your listeners are going to gasp. I'd never heard of Indiana Beach before.
No, really? Solo.
Never heard of it. So Eddie introduced me to... Indiana Beach.
Do you guys travel well together? Or is this kind of a planes, trains, and automobiles?
No, we're in a van. We're in a conversion van. There was primarily four of us that traveled. Our director of photography.
And y'all get along?
Actually.
The first couple legs of the trips, yeah, sure. Then after that.
Well, because of the reality of a family trip, everybody doesn't get along. I thought maybe one of you would start a fight just to get the full feel.
You know, one thing that did happen in the van is it's a long van, and we did eventually each have kind of our own spot in the van. Like, associate producer Erica was always in that third seat behind me. Yeah. I was always in the spread out in the second seat. Eddie and Tim, the director of photography, sort of took turns driving.
Talent gets the most space.
Of course.
Right.
And does the least amount of driving.
And the least amount of driving. And I just, so we don't cheat Michigan, so we Indiana Dunes, and then we go on up all the way up the coast of Michigan, Holland, you know, South Haven, Grand Haven, all the way up to Mackinac Island.
Yeah. Wow.
That's amazing. And a lot of Chicagoans listening right now will be able to text in and say where their favorite places are. When you're doing this, how much did you realize, Jeffrey and Eddie and the crew, that you how much did you realize the things that you didn't experience? Because you talked about the Dells at one point, and as you just mentioned, Indiana Beach. How many of these destinations you haven't
actually
been part
of? Introduced Eddie to Sleeping Bear Dunes, and it was a moment. It was amazing.
It's pretty cool.
It's one of the most beautiful places in the Midwest,
sure. I go up to this place in Michigan that I'm not going to tell anyone about.
Traverse City.
No, I'm not giving it away, but it's up on the Michigan shore, but on the way
close to Traverse City.
It's close to Traverse City. He really wants me to tell. I saw some people yesterday who we vacationed with. They go like, "You're not going to tell, are you?"
Right. Don't give it up.
Right. But anyway, we pass this overlook every year when we get up there. It's like way up on the west coast of Michigan. And I said, Eddie, you know, we're not. We were just on our way to another shoot, and I said, Eddie, I got to show you this. This is and we pulled over and we walked up to this overlook, and here's this sprawling view of Lake Michigan, and Eddie's reaction was unbelievable.
Well, it just looks like you're in the Caribbean. You know, it's that turquoise blue water. And you can see across. You can see across Lake Michigan. You can almost see Wisconsin from up there.
Towering dunes.
I heard a great story, and I don't know if it's true, but even if it's not, I'd like to think it is. And that's after the Great Chicago Fire, the majority of lumber that came to Chicago to rebuild Chicago came from Traverse City. In the forests around Traverse City, and it was, you know, put it on the boat.
I've heard that too.
It's true, but everyone says that. Every side of Wisconsin,
everybody claims it was
Michigan
their lumber.
Says, you know what? We've deforested our forests to send Chicago lumber, and it's probably true. You know, everyone I think kind of contributed. It had to come from somewhere.
It actually wasn't after the fire. In the period from about the 1840s, when Chicago became the fastest growing city in the world, Michigan and Wisconsin were totally deforested, basically, to build Chicago. There were these schooners, these schooner ships, and they would go up to all these ports along both the Wisconsin and Michigan shore, and they would just come back to Chicago loaded with lumber. And a lot of that lumber was still sitting in lumber yards along the river when the Chicago fire happened, which was tinder, you know.
Wow.
And the really weird thing is that a Chicago entrepreneur named William B. Ogden had a forest up in Peshtigo, Wisconsin, like up on, like kind of around Green Bay, burned on the same night as the Chicago fire.
Wow, that was one dangerous cow.
October 8th, 1871, there was a huge forest, and many more people died than in Chicago. More than 1,000 people in Peshtigo, Wisconsin.
How do we not know the Peshtigo fire?
Yeah, it's a.
It should be a legend.
Yeah, it's classic.
And it was
Chicago.
A forest owned by a Chicago entrepreneur who was bringing that lumber to Chicago to build Chicago.
Wow. The great thing about Chicago on vacation, it's not the kind of special where, you know, you're saying this restaurant's great or this hotel's great. It's really doing what you do best, which is celebrating the history of these places and why they're significant and special to the region.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying it's not a travel show, right?
Right. It's the history of the place that you travel to. It's the people that, you know, either establish the area or who inhabit it now and make it what it is.
Did see you on a water slide.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's the other thing. Eddie's in his... Are you in your 30s or your 40s?
Mid-30s.
Eddie's in his 30s. I'm in my 60s.
Okay. Your 60s.
So
you look
Eddie,
good, buddy.
Eddie's like, you know... We're doing water slides, we're doing snowmobiling, we're doing skiing, we're doing water skiing. And I'm the kind of game. I'll do anything, you know.
But at some point.
Well, you know, when a 30-year-old looks at a water slide, they want the one that's like vertical.
Yeah. Right.
I like the water slide where you're on a little inflatable thing. Right.
A lazy river more.
Yeah,
but something called the point of no return looks better.
Yeah. Sure. It looked better. It also scratched up my back tomorrow.
That's part of the fun. That's part of the fun of it.
Then he puts me in this like tube where they close the door and then the floor falls out of the bottom of it.
So, Eddie, you're trying to kill the talent.
Well, Jeffrey, like you said, he will do anything once. So you know you got one shot at
no,
it.
No, I tried water skiing three times. We did three. I had water skied in my 20s, and it wasn't that hard, right? But I hadn't water skied in 40 years. And we tried to shoot this water skiing scene. Take one, bam.
Sure.
Take two, no. Take three, I felt some muscle pull. I'm not going to tell you which one. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we're done. And so Eddie... We punted and we filmed.
I don't want to speak for you, but anytime you have a groinal situation, you're not going to want to continue there.
How did you guess?
Well,
I did like how you started it, though, with when you went to Lake Geneva. You talked about where you actually spent childhood in your seventh birthday, even at a what's now a college or something.
Is it's called problem? George Williams College Camp, and we found a picture of me blowing out the candles on my seventh birthday cake in the dining hall at George Williams College, which we put in the show.
Yeah, I wonder just about the way travel has changed. And you think about that it's so easy to get on a plane or even a train or even to go further than the destinations of our past.
Well, what's really changed is the interstate highway changed everything. And it used to be when you were driving in a car, like looking out the windows, it was like this mystery adventure, like what was going to be around the next corner.
Right.
And then the interstate highway standardized everything. All the signage is the same, all the bridge heights, road widths, and kids are just looking at their screens, and every exit you get off of on the interstate, pardon the, you know, ending in a preposition there, but and every exit you encounter, it's the same chain hotels, the same fast food restaurants. But what was great about this show, Chicago on Vacation, debuting tomorrow on WTTW.
Nice plug.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Bear.
I've done this before. This is not my first rodeo. Mm-hmm. The great thing we found out was once you get off the interstate and away from the what I call the everywhere strip, you know, with Panera and all the other chain hotels, local color is still alive.
And it's a mile in either direction in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
You don't have to drive for 20 minutes once you get off the interstate. But it is, you make a great point. It is tougher to convince the kids in the car to stop looking at your screens. You're missing something when it's another Holiday Inn and another Panera.
Yeah. We talked to, we interview some people along the way and kind of reminisce about the golden era of road trips. And, you know, they speak of it as if it's like this cherished memory of just the fact of being in the car and, you know, games you would play, the food you were allowed
sitting
to have.
Sitting on the hump.
Stuff like that, what you can
no
spot
seat belts
along the way.
Plus, we were always sitting backwards. You remember?
Right, the back station the back station wagon.
They highlight the station wagon at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, I sit
making
in
faces
the,
at everyone.
I sit in this old vintage station wagon with the back seat. And the thing I loved, you're facing backwards. You're looking out the window. There's an ashtray. For the kids,
of course.
I guess, apparently. Right.
Unless you put grandma back there. So, in taking the seat belts and stuffing them down, where your dad would get mad if you didn't shove them under the seat fast enough. Take those things and stuff them under the seat.
Yeah, well, everyone did reminisce about being a kid, enjoying the road trip. We didn't hear too many parents with, you know, a family of six enjoying those 8 hours in a car with their family.
Right. Do I have to pull over back there?
One place along the trip that we'll see on the show that you saw something you didn't know existed that you were surprised by?
The one place I had not been besides Indiana Beach was the Wisconsin Dells. I had actually never been.
You'd never been to the Dells?
No, they call it the New York Magazine.
You could lose your Illinois citizenship.
They call it Las Vegas for tweens. But it is like Las Vegas now. I mean, it's like they've got the Roman Coliseum and the Trojan Horse and the water slides. I actually liked it. I
like the Dells.
And there's a good energy, you know.
There's a couple of great golf courses. Lots of places to eat.
I've been there when I was a kid, and I went back there 2 years ago. We went to Ishnala Supper Club, which is right on the Mirror Lake there. And, yeah, I was amazed that it has been able to retain its 50s, 1960s charm, as well as giving way to the Vegas for kids.
Yeah.
Essentially that. A lot of mini golf.
Yeah, exactly.
So for you guys, you did this, you shot this in the summer. We're talking about this on you know, March 1st, the coldest day of March history. Are these? I always think about these destinations, and they always kind of almost like I think East Coasters think of Cape Cod. Well, that's great, but it's packed, and everybody goes up there, and it's the tourist destination of Chicago, all these different places, and I'm never going to be able to go. When you were shooting, did you feel like it was crowded or overpopulated or there was just too much going on?
We never felt overcrowded. You know, we tried to hit a lot of these locations during their most popular weekend. So if you had, you know, like the Cherry Festival in Traverse City, you know, we wanted to be up there for that. You know, that's probably not a typical weekend for Traverse City and the surrounding areas. You know, but we, I think for the most part, you know, I think everyone kind of has their spot. So if you go to Door County, you go to Door County every year. If you've got a house up there, why would you go anywhere else?
Right.
So I think you can't, maybe you feel crowded, but you know everyone up there. And it's like, oh, the Johnsons are here again, or the Martins are here this weekend. So I, there's a real communal
feel. Yeah, it's your family tradition.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The North Woods, that's your gangster vacation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the North Woods, actually, we went to in January. So we did the World Snowmobile Championships up there, which is just crazy.
Love snowboards.
I did not know how loud they were. We've got this shot of me just like plugging my ears because I was right at the starting line. But yes, the North Woods, conveniently, during Prohibition, were not too far from Canada where liquor could be made and sold. And there's lots of lakes to land your seaplane mm-hmm. on. And so we went to Little Bohemia where there was a famously botched raid on John Dillinger and Babyface Nelson. And it still has the bullet hole. They've like turned it into a tourist attraction. There are actual bullet holes in the wall.
Wow.
Yeah, if you've seen the Johnny Depp Public Enemy movie,
yeah,
they filmed on location there. So we got to see a little bit of, you know, the Hollywood left stuff they left behind, and then the real
cool
stuff from the 1930s.
Mary, our traffic person, she has a house in the North Woods that she goes to, and I think
she's also a gangster.
She is a gangster, but that you talk about like it over being overwhelming. She and her husband go back and forth the 7.5 hours, 8 hours all the time,
all the time.
So it's,
yeah, well, we
it's
got a place up there, and mother-in-law's up there
a couple of times a month, right?
Yeah. Well, that was the place in Hayward. There was one of those lodges, as well, where they were.
Have you ever caught a muskie?
I've done muskie fishing. No. There.
We don't fish. My husband does, but a little bit. But yeah.
Jeffrey Bear, Eddie Griffin, they are the guys behind the new special Chicago on Vacation, which premieres tomorrow night on WTTW. Always great to see you guys, especially on Pulaski Day, which is, of course, you got any nuggets, any history nuggets for Pulaski Day?
Well, we don't know where he vacationed.
We do not know where Casimir Pulaski vacationed, unfortunately. He was a war hero. He was a revolutionary war hero. Fought in the American Revolution.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of cool.
And loved punchkis.
We don't know.
Oh, we don't know. Okay.
We don't know.
Seemed like the right idea.
Always good to see you guys. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, everyone.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Mark Carman's been here for Dave Ennett all morning. We haven't checked in with you yet. We made any decisions on the wedding? How are the wedding prep? How is the wedding prep going?
You know, we're struggling, Steve. I'm going to be honest. I'm about to cave, and just I think I'm going to follow your advice, actually.
Uh huh.
Which is
be interested,
right?
But don't plan on making any decisions,
right? Yes, dear. The whole yes, dear.
No. Don't be condescending. Be interested. What do you want to do? Here's my thoughts. No, you're right.
Oh, okay. That's better than yes, dear. Okay.
Yeah, because yes, dear is a pat on the head. No woman wants to hear that.
Right.
So are we leaning to sooner or further away?
We're probably leaning to sooner.
Sooner, okay.
Mary looks very concerned. We're working on this.
Yeah, no. Well, it's March 4th, so.
Right.
What target month are we talking about?
Well, the sooner would be July 5th, Steve. Yeah. You available? July 5th?
Yeah, July 5th. I'll make myself available.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got some very important things.
So we've got 4 months.
That's
not a lot.
You can do it. You know, they fake tell you when you're getting a dress that you need like 8 months lead time, but they can get you one. So that's the only.
Getting a lot of pressure on the dress. You got to rush the dress now if you do that. The whole rush dress thing.
That's the whole scam.
Upcharge there.
They have you order a size too big so they can take it all in.
I can get you on my show, say yes to the tuxedo, where you just go in, get a tuxedo, and you go, yeah, it's fine.
Right.
Carm, I know somebody that just got engaged in the Chicago area. They're getting married in Chicago on September 21st. It's like 6 months. It's doable.
It's doable.
You can do it.
There's a big difference.
They have a venue. They have everything. They're ready to go.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between July and September.
60 days.
Okay. Yeah.
2 months.
Not too much.
They're both short. They're both express lines.
Okay.
July, everybody. Yeah, you've got to go to the fall.
Got to go to the see Mary.
What day of the week is the 5th?
5th is a Friday, but it's holiday week. That was why it was kind of appealing.
Okay.
You know, we got
Friday weddings are good.
Everybody,
Friday's the best day of the week.
Yep, that's when I got married. Yep.
See, people don't want to get married on a Friday because they're worried about the traffic. I'm hearing a lot about the traffic. Right. Traffic's terrible on a Friday. Who cares?
My niece did get married on a Friday at the ballroom on Navy Pier.
Who doesn't go out on a Friday?
Well, but here's the thing. You want to find out. Yeah. You want to find out who doesn't want to come to your wedding because of the traffic, and make sure you don't invite them. If traffic is a hindrance to come to your wedding, they're not close enough to you to come to your wedding.
Yeah. Agreed. It's the majority of the suburbanites if they have to go to a Chicago wedding, let me just tell you. They're all like, oh, boy.
Carm, you don't know anybody in the suburbs, do you?
I know a couple people in the suburbs, dude. But, hey, listen, you want to be late? Come late. I don't care if you're there for the ceremony. I'm not going to notice you. Come for dessert.
So what decisions have you made?
Not many, Steve. Not many, no.
How about the midnight snack? Have you made a decision on a midnight snack?
Midnight snack, we're leaning towards Superdog.
Yeah, there you go. Interesting call.
I love it.
Superdog does an excellent job of providing the Superdog in a very seamless manner. I'm into seamless.
And do we know where the reception's going to be?
No, we don't know that yet, Steve. Mm. We're working on that.
Okay.
Probably at the venue. One stop shop.
The venue, it's called, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
They do a nice job.
Yeah, I'm getting loads of anxiety about the whole thing here. I just need this decision to be made, be done, let's move forward. I put my 2 cents in. Okay.
You got a dollar figure that you want this to come in under?
As affordable as possible, Steve, without breaking the bank here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all at the same time, if you
Chelsea
will.
On the same page, or she wants you to spend what you need to spend?
We're going back and forth on that one.
Not like you haven't agreed on a single thing.
No, it's been rough, Steve. But we're having a, it's been a great journey. We're really partnering and finding out where how we could come together, even in the midst of
testing our love.
Yes, I mean I'm getting calls from everyone.
Yeah,
my dad's calling me yesterday. You know, why don't you just do it on a Saturday, Fred? Don't need that out of you right now.
Right now, no, Dad. I just need, you know what you need from your dad? Yes, dear. That's what your dad needs to say to you.
Just support what we're going
to
do.
I'm pumped for this wedding. I can't wait to go.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Jojo, I got you a table one.
My man.
Joe's bringing his band.
You can bring you and I'm inviting Harbaugh. I heard Jim's coming.
It's Jimmy.
I got it. I'm patched in.
All right, let me hear it.
Now, from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
Relax. Systems check out. Signal across the board. What's the frequency?
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
All right, 942. Bill and Wendy at 10. Sam, anything you want to plug for the rest of the week that we're doing?
We are doing a lot.
All right, so stand by for a lot.
Sorry, I was...
It's going to be a lot. The rest of the week, we're doing a lot.
It's going to be a lot.
Tomorrow we have your favorite father, Tom Hurley, in studio.
Oh, I love Tom.
Yeah, so...
St. Pat's.
Yeah.
And also after the show today, I'm going to tape another edition of the Steve Cochran Bonus Show podcast with Michael Auslan, an expert on the Asian Peninsula, who will talk about the North Korean deal that didn't happen and what that all means. All right, Justin.
Coming up, this is exciting, in studio with us, great Chicago DJ, Shantae Linwood, who is, of course, both a DJ, she's an actor, she's a comedian, but she has a big gig coming up here this week, which is a collaboration with the MCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art, the Chicago Athletic Association, where she's taking over a hotel room downtown on Michigan Avenue.
Just staying overnight? Or?
I think that's the plan, but I think it's going to be decked out, both designed and obviously the music will be inspired and designed by Shantae, who is in studio with us now. Shantae, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you being here. Oh, there we go. Nothing.
I'm not sure which switch we're on. Boys, where are we?
Okay, we'll get to that in a second. Anyway, Shantae's I'm excited to have her in because it's Women's History Month, so she's got she's going to DJ live, which is awesome. But this is really focusing on women in music because as a DJ, and we're going to talk to her about it, she is producing in a male-dominated industry, to say the least. There's not a lot of women who are DJs, although that number has gone up exponentially. But
we have our own DJ here, Kassara. Yep. She's a DJ Cash Money, I think, or something. One of her names. But
so let's see. Is Shantae there? No?
We don't know. Shantae is,
we're working on it. We had a board blowout literally right before we introduced her.
Shantae also is a part of the Chance the Rapper.
Right. He's ready?
Crew.
I'm sorry.
All right, we'll see you in a second.
Oh, I heard somebody.
All right,
somebody.
Do we have her?
Shantae! Can you hear me?
There we are.
Fantastic. Yes. Thank you, Bob.
She's in our performance studio.
She's my friend, actually. I love
her. Come on.
I love her, too. Yeah.
She's great.
So tell us what's going to happen at the Chicago Athletic Association when you're taking over a hotel room.
Okay. So I teamed up with the MCA. They contacted me because last year I did a pop-up with Emporium Pop-Ups, and it was called The Dollhouse, and it was 24 events in 30 days, and it was to promote and celebrate women and women of color, artists, musicians, DJs, pretty much everything. And so the MCA asked me to essentially do that again this year on a much smaller scale, so one night, but it's to pay homage to Lori Simmons, who is a feminist icon in the photography world. And I myself wouldn't call myself a feminist. I'm more of a womanist. But so I'm just building out the space. It doesn't sound as, it's not as weird as it sounds, like hanging out in a hotel. But so just designing, and it's a really cool immersive installation. And then we'll also be DJing.
Well, beyond just DJing, I mean, being an actor and a comedian, I think that's all, being in that industry, and it's a largely male-dominated industry, especially when you talk about hip-hop music, where, and you say this in your bio, too, where it seems like the comfort level is they want women are used as props, and you see this in music videos and all the way down the line. So you've been having to forge your own way and your own identity through this industry as you go.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of funny, not funny, but interesting that the woman's art from this pop-up is very much so using a lot of dolls and figurines and mannequins. So it's kind of funny that that's also how I feel about women and how we're usually objectified or used when it comes to almost anything in life, but definitely in male-dominated industries, which to me is everything, but especially in music, art, we're more the side piece or the object than the focus.
And yeah, then so what it is. There's a meaning to the look and the sound then.
Yeah.
Now, you do a multiplicity of things. Mm-hmm. You're also a manager?
Oh, yes. So I actually signed on to help out my friend Taylor Bennett and his label that he started a year or two ago. And so I've been helping a couple of his artists, Bianca Shaw, and she actually has an album releasing on Thursday too. So this has been a crazy week.
This is almost like a Ryan Seacrest thing. You're taking all the jobs now.
Yeah,
you're doing all the jobs.
I'm pretty much amazing.
Shante, so you're going to perform for us. You're going to do some live DJing right now. What are we going to hear?
I'm just going to cry.
All right. Okay. All right.
That's very MCA of you.
Yeah, it's all right. I'm gonna play some random stuff, probably some stuff that you might not normally play on WGN Radio.
Well, we're not exactly a big music station, but we love great performance, and that's why we're glad you're here.
Okay.
All right. So take it away here, Shante Linwood, DJing. Take it away.
Baby, suck up on that to that hickey, baby. Watch big, coulda brought a Range Rover. Chain little, but I spent some change on it. And I'ma put the gang on it. They'll die about me, they'll bang on it. In that out the frame on it. Yeah, he got my name on it. Itty bitty pretty on the realest in the city. Only with the plug, got a work a Billy showing up. Only talk about bands when he hit me. Chose him, he ain't pick me, and we never doing quickie.
I wanna slim by, mama with some pork with off. I wanna slim by, mama with some pork with off. I wanna slim by, mama with some pork with off. I wanna slim by, mama with some pork with off. Pork, 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 pork with off. Pork, 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 pork with off. Pork, 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 pork with off. Pork, 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 pork with off. Pork, 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 pork with off.
Look. This sound like Cardi to the stage. This sound like Cardi with the braids. Jermaine Dupri, baby, money in the thing. Five, just throw it in the cage. To my lifestyle, precise style. I be dripped up, baby, wipe it down. See them looking cold, looking flip. This my gift to a truck load in the back, stash, stash. I just drop kick your back, six back, six back. I just drop song, hit charts, impact, impact. Stop that, check it, check.
I wanna slim by, mama with some pork with off. I wanna slim by, mama with some pork with off. I wanna slim by, mama with some pork with off. I wanna slim by, mama with some pork with off.
I got a new life, you and home.
your congratulations. I recognize your false confidence and calculated promises all in your conversation. I hear people that feel entitled. Look at me crazy cause I ain't invite you. Oh, you are important, you the one with a gift. That's how you find out who you're dealing with. A small percentage you I'm building with. I want the credit if I'm losing or I'm winning. Oh, my mama, that's the real shit.
Naked. I wanna be a baby, baby, baby. Spinning in his wedges like he came from Maytag. Rock the wizard on the brown. When I get like this, I can't be around you. I'm too little to dim down a notch. Cause I can end some things that I'm gon' do. Wow, wow, wow. Wow, 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 thoughts. Wow, wow, wow. When I'm with you, all I get is wild thoughts. Wow, wow, wow. When I'm with you, all I get is wild thoughts.
Hey boy, would you meet me on the roof tonight? I got a surprise for you.
I love that ending. Love that. Yeah. Round of applause.
All right. Yeah, yeah.
There are 917 elements to that mix.
That was great for Women's History Month. Some great female-inspired music. And,
all right, get the plug in, too. Thursday where?
Shantae is going to be taking over a hotel room at the Chicago Athletic Association in collaboration with the MCA coming up on Thursday. This is a big thing. She was talking about doing a pop-up before, and this is the next iteration of it. So that's coming up on Thursday downtown at the
The roof off the sucker.
Athletic Association. And you could see her all. She's tremendous.
Where can't you see her? Yeah. It's probably the bigger question.
You can follow her on Shantae Does Stuff as well, which is her website. I know, right?
All right, we got a break. Thank you, Shantae, very much for coming in. All right, Bill and Wendy coming up in just a second. You guys have a big show coming up today, so we'll plug it heavily in just a moment.
All right.
Is there anything you want to say right now that's not part of the plug?
No, it's all plugged.
It's all plugged.
It's all plugged. Okay, okay. How do you feel about Carm's wedding?
I'm very excited. Very excited.
Still getting married?
Wendy.
I ask you every time I see you.
I need some confidence from you. It's getting...
I'm just asking.
Yes.
He almost went into like a full shutdown there, didn't he? I need some help.
It's stressful.
I want Wendy to be on the team. I feel like I got to continue to reel her back in.
I just think it's great that you've invited the entire staff and all the listeners.
We're trying to think of what the theme should be for Mark's wedding.
ABBA.
ABBA would be a great theme, Mark.
ABBA. All ABBA.
Consider
all
that.
Superdog.
Superdog.
Oh, I like
nice.
That.
That's his midnight snack.
It's the best.
Yeah. Right?
What it about really Das on. Boot? Do you like Das Boot?
Is not as theme? Much. Yeah, not
in
as
a
much.
A very it's a small bit area. Down.
Coming up, Stories of Matter with Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next on WGN. Just a few, Bill and Wendy are here, just a few of the things I didn't have time to get on the show today that you guys may want to do. I mean, I'm not telling you what to do. Obviously, it's your show.
What are they?
7 healthy reasons to drink beer.
We could do that.
I have 20 reasons.
New avocado toast sneakers from Saucony.
Ooh.
A tourist.
How did you not get to that?
A tourist was swept out to sea after posing on an ice shelf.
Oh, yeah.
These are all things we didn't have time to get to.
Oh.
And JetBlue is offering free flights to anyone who will delete all of their Instagram posts. I don't know why JetBlue is mad at Instagram, but. How those two relate, but any of those
all right.
available?
Get to all those.
What are you guys doing on the show?
Do you know the website Cameo, Steve?
I know the band Cameo.
No, this is a separate entity.
You're great, so straight.
Great 80s band.
Yes, they are.
You should be on Cameo, Steve.
Word up.
At Cameo, you pick your favorite celebrity, and if they're on Cameo, they have an asking price, and for that price, they'll record a message.
Oh, yeah.
Debbie Gibson.
You can get Debbie Gibson for $200.
You've been a victim of.
I've been the victim, and also a couple years back, this concept, I don't know if it's Cameo, but we went into a thing, friends and I, that we were sending back and forth paid celebrities calling our
voicemail. Oh, that's fun.
It's like...
That's fun.
I think I got rerun at the time.
Hey, Barry, hey.
At what point does it become cost prohibitive and the joke's over?
I was like, all right. Yeah.
Well, the CEO of that company, Cameo, and lead singer for the band Cameo, will also be on with us.
Oh, that's great.
That's great.
I was wondering what happened to Cameo.
They're coming on.
They turned into a website.
Yeah.
That's great. All right. We'll be back tomorrow. And until then, Wendy will say this.